Play Sumi Nation, welcome back and join us once again on the Highway to the Impact Zone. I am your host, Logan Crosland, and I would like to thank you for joining us for episode number 24, where we will be discussing the December 31st, January 7th, and January 14th episodes of Impact. Let me now bring in my co-host and student, and the guy who I will continuously apologize to until things get better, Jake Williams. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good, Logan. No need to apologize. We all know what's happening on this pod at this point. I recently realized that I brought this up in our chat that we have, that somehow I never made the connection yet that we have six, our crew that does this podcast that rotates in and out as cumulatively six people, which corresponds to the 6 points of impact on the ring here, which is a nice bit of symmetry that we definitely planned from the beginning. Right, Logan? I know this was how you planned it, right?
Yeah, I totally did that on purpose. Wink, wink. Yeah, that was a happy accident, I guess. So, yeah, I definitely did not do that on purpose, but glad it worked out that way, I guess. Now we'll bring in our experts for the night. Firstly, he is captain of the Chicken Salad Express and the guy I'm hoping won't pass out on us tonight. Ben Locke, how you doing, Ben?
Can't guarantee that, Logan. Always puts me in a bit of danger when you call me an expert, because that means I have to say something with an expert's opinion, like I'm going to be one of them guys on CNN. But
I was going to say, you'll be like Brodus Clay on Fox News, you know, a little bit.
So enough to get by.
But we know how you like to pass out on Twitch streams, so hopefully that won't fall over to the end of the podcast.
I've had a little snooze, so I'm okay. I'm all right. You do that once, and everybody's just going to take the mick out of you for life.
Yeah, Ozzy, it might be your permanent introduction at some point, or at this point, so we'll see where it goes from here.
What did I miss? I only missed the main event of WrestleMania. It's nothing. It's all right.
Yeah, I was like, you'll miss the best match of the weekend. It's casual, you know.
Fine.
And you even woke up at the end, so I guess you saw the finish. So that works out at least. But speaking of passing out, this next guy actually made Sean Kidd proud for once by passing out in the middle of Godzilla versus Kong. That would be Lewis Maynard. How you doing, Lewis?
Oh, I'm doing really good, and I'm much, much more awake tonight.
Yeah, well, you kind of can't blame him on that one, because it was very, very boring plot-wise, but the sound was very loud, so I'm surprised he actually somewhat slept through it. But
that was one of the worst movies I've seen in years. So.
You also made Sean Kidd proud by saying that, so we're on a good note with Sean so far with Lewis. So hopefully that'll continue, but I kind of doubt it. We'll see where it goes. Lewis, to start off the episode, we usually ask what your thoughts were on the last episode. What did you think of the stuff we discussed on the last episode?
All in all, I feel like those were just kind of shows getting us to the pay-per-view, to these like other filler shows getting us to the pay-per-view. I don't think there was a lot of bad stuff going on in it, but there was nothing that really stood out to me as being amazing other than the like slowly introducing that Kevin Nash might actually start going after Jeff Jarrett here, which would be fun because like I don't like the Kingston Wrestling. I think it's a really boring gimmick for them to do. So I like that we might see Nash actually get to do some other cool stuff against Jarrett.
Yeah, I gotcha. Ben, what were your thoughts on the stuff we discussed last time?
I kind of agree with Lewis because, you know, we're in a 6-week build to final resolution and you've got the holiday period as well. So I feel like the last, you know, the first show probably in our run as well, everything's a bit of a holding pattern ready to go. And you'll see that in the last couple of episodes. But Lewis said, like Nash is just breaking out, just being an absolute dick, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah, I gotcha. I thought they were definitely a holdover, kind of falling off from the previous pay-per-view and kind of building to the next one. But yeah, it's kind of a weird period of the year. just kind of being on. There's a couple of holiday episodes, like we discussed the Christmas Eve episode last time, and we're going to talk about the New Year's Eve episode tonight. So yeah, those two definitely are kind of holding pattern shows for sure. But we're kind of going to finish the build to final resolution here tonight. So with the December 31st being our last episode in 2004, I'll go to Jake first on this one. Kind of give me your thoughts on 2004, like where we've gotten to at this point, and like where you think we're headed as we go into 2005.
Yeah, so it's I've kind of talked about it on the shows we've had as we go, because I guess as somebody new to TNA, I'm kind of think of it like big picture too, as I go through, as I'm trying to get an idea of the entire promotion. But I would say, I know we were all excited when we got out of the weekly pay-per-view model, because those led to some pretty trash bag shows on the, just because they didn't have enough build and they were kind of just throwing shit out there and almost like they needed to fill too much time for what they had in the hopper. And so I think since they, now we've only had one monthly pay-per-view, right? So far, two, I'm sorry. Yeah. But both of them have been, the first one was shaky, but the last one was pretty good. And it seems like they're getting into a pretty good groove as far as like making the big shows. The monthly pay-per-view is pretty good. But unfortunately, even with them kind of being able to focus on one show, I still feel like the TV overall is kind of expendable. Like it most of the time comes off as filler. We talk about in all these episodes, they put a lot of, you know, video packages and promos repeated over and over again. A lot of the matches kind of seem like they're just like rolling the dice and putting two people together and letting them go out there for a few minutes. Like, I feel like they still haven't really figured out how to do TV that builds to what they're going to. It's kind of like, rather than like actually build on TV, they just kind of tell us what the matches on the pay-per-view are going to be. And then the TV is just like a bunch of random shit thrown in there most of the time.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right. But Ben, what do you think about 2004 as we kind of exit it, and where we're kind of headed in 2005?
I think we're in a bit of a transition period at the moment, because they're trying to get rid of the stink of Russo from everything, and they're going back to Dusty's style of booking, and it's working, but they've got to take baby steps with it. It's, you know, you can't go from everything being on a pull and everything being convoluted to, you know, straightforward 80s style booking in a couple of weeks. It just won't work like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lewis, what are your thoughts on the situation?
I mean, I thought 2004 was kind of an okay to rough start for TNA. And I say that because, like, the X Division has been amazing to watch. The tag team division has been really good, even though we have a lot of Team Canada with the same match endings and most of the tag matches. But we've also had two amazing cage matches that were the highlights of the year for TNA. The TNA's big problem with this 2004 year has been their world title and main event star power, being that it's just been really boring. The main event matches, the title matches have not been great for the world title. And I think a lot of that has to do with just like Jeff Jarrett's an okay heel and the guitar shots are fun, but he's not really somebody that like puts on five-star matches. He's not what we'll see later with like Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle. He's not those guys. So having this world title picture with him and then not doing the smart things with the world title, like giving it to Monty, who had an amazing year, or hell, giving it to like Abyss, who's had an amazing year, just sticking it with Jeff and then having like these bad matches with Jeff Hardy and the like ladder match with Hardy and Nash and Hall and Jarrett. Like that's the big thing that cost TNA a lot in this 2004 year, was that main event picture.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that the main event picture has been pretty weak for most of our run so far. But yeah, I think we kind of started out pretty rough, but once we got kind of out of the weekly pay-per-view model, I don't know if things necessarily picked up immediately after that. But as we're kind of closing out the year with Turning Point and just a few episodes before and after that, I feel like we're kind of starting to catch our stride, or they're kind of trying to, or getting to the point where they're catching their stride. So I think they're starting to pick up a little bit. I mean, they're still putting out some kind of weird backstage segments, kind of stupid backstage segments like we had last time. But I think they're kind of figuring out the max structure part of the Impact shows, because I think that they have they've kind of gotten away from the jobber stuff, because, like, you know, there's only so many times you want to see a bit. I mean, you could watch a best squash somebody anytime you wanted to, but there's only so many times that you can see, you know, 3LK and Jarrett squash a bunch of guys. Like, that's not what you want to see week in and week out. So I think they're starting to put some, you know, kind of superstar versus superstar matches out there. They have a few jobber matches thrown in here and there, but I think they're starting to get the match structure down at least a little bit on the episodes of Impact. But yeah, you know, they still have some stinkers out there, but the last pay-per-view was really strong. And from what I've heard, the next one is pretty strong as well. So definitely looking forward to talking about that on the next episode. But yeah, like I said, I think they're kind of catching their stride as they kind of finish out the year, and hopefully they can keep that momentum going. But from here, let's not waste any more time. Let's go right on into the Impact Zone. We opened with a review of the announcement that Dusty made last week, that Jarrett will have three world title contenders. They will have a triple threat match earlier in the night at Final Resolution. It's going to be Monty, Nash, and DDP. And whoever wins that match will eventually face Jarrett at the end of the night. And it's an elimination match, which I don't think Dusty really spoke out very well. But, yeah, it's an elimination triple threat match, and whoever wins will get Jarrett at the end of the night. But then we get Dusty heading into the arena with his assistant, Tracy. They run into Trinity, where Dusty kind of leaves a folder with Tracy, and then Tracy and Trinity kind of get into a catty little high school mean girls kind of conversation. It's kind of a stupid little crap segment in the backstage, but this won't be the last time that these two plus Johnny Fairplay eventually have crappy little backstage segments, but kind of a weird way to start the show. But we go straight from that into our first match of the night. It is the Naturals and Elix Skipper, and they're taking on AJ Styles, Johnny B. Badd, and Sonny Siaki. My first note on this match is, who did AJ Styles and Elix Skipper piss off to be put in this match? to start the match, Siaki brings Chase Stevens into the ring as he's kind of like biding time on the apron. Siaki really gives it to both Naturals to start, eventually hitting maybe one of the worst Samoan drops I've ever seen on Andy Douglas. He then tags in Styles, who immediately gets eye poked. This allows both of the Naturals to tag in, or one of the Naturals to tag in. Douglas then rushes in and gets sidewalk slammed by AJ. Styles really gets after Douglas until Stevens makes a sneak tag and jumps in from behind. And this might lead to also one of the worst double teams I've ever seen. Stevens like bulldogs Styles into Douglas's knee and like completely misses his knee. I think it was good in thought, but in execution it looked really, really bad. But the Naturals don't really seem to want to tag in Skipper for some reason, but they both kind of successfully wear down Styles as they tag each other in and out throughout the match. Styles and Douglas eventually end up battling to the top rope, where Styles knocks him down, but Skipper finally gets involved and knocks Styles down to the ground on the outside as well. Skipper then does a corkscrew dive to the outside on top of Styles. Siaki eventually comes around and makes the save. There's an all out attack on the outside. He grabs Styles and throws him into the guardrail as they propel him to the other side of the ring, and he actually tags in Badd. Badd then comes in, taking everybody out. Things eventually break down, where Styles kind of dives to the outside on top of Skipper. Siaki clotheslines Douglas out of the ring, and Badd hits the Badd Mood on to Stevens, and that's how they get the win. Jake, what'd you think of this opener?
Yeah, like you said, Logan, the Naturals offense, I say it every time they have a match, but their offense, anytime they have to be on top, is just trash. Like, they have the most lame, like, heel, weak, like, scraping guy's head on the ropes weekly. It's just like, I can't stand them when they're on top. I think if they're getting their ass beat, like, they're okay. they can kind of sell because there's like these lanky dudes with like oily hair that they could flip their hair around and look decent selling. But anytime they have to be on top, they look terrible. And poor Elix, like, if I'm him, I do not want to be in the same match with AJ, because AJ basically does a lot of the same like cool athletic maneuvers, but just way tighter and better looking than he does. So it kind of just makes him look not as good as normal, because AJ does everything he does just better. Like when he does do that corkscrew kind of move outside, he undershoots it a little bit. And it's like we said with him, he's always a little disappointing because he does some cool stuff, but so many times he kind of, I feel like it's rare that he completely nails his stuff. Like how we talk about AJ always nailing his stuff, I feel like Elix, it's kind of rare. He's like the anti-AJ in a way, but I didn't mind the finish too much. Like I thought it was a decent little like breakdown chaotic finish, but man, Bad and Siaki, what a strange pairing. Because it kind of seems like they're like being positioned as almost a tag team, because we've seen them on the same side a few times, but a real strange like matchup here. And I want a star and a half on it. I think even with AJ being as good as he is, it's hard to make up for kind of the weaker people in this match, namely the Naturals, I think kind of held this down from really being anything that was too good.
Yeah, I got you. They must not be an official tag team yet, because they're not up for tag team of the year with every other tag team in the
2005, company, so. Baby, the year of Scotty and Bad.
Siaki and Bad are usually used in the same sentence, but not like that. But Ben, what did you think of this opener?
So my first note of this match was, I'll read it with word, AJ having to tag with these two jamokes must be someone on the booking committee's idea of a rib, or they've been smoking some of the 3LK's good shit. It was as generic and bland a six-man tag as you can have, but the crowd love it because they love AJ. They love Elix after the whole cage match situation, and they can put up with the other guy, the four guys. I went star and three quarters on it. It was fine. It was competent, but there's not a great deal else to say about it.
Gotcha, Lewis. What'd you think?
Yeah, I had a note down that AJ must have bet Dusty $100 that he could go into a match with Siaki and Bad and still make himself look good. But yeah, it was, like Ben was saying, it was very bland, very generic. I think the big thing that hurt it was the very badly botched final sequence when Bad forgot like he was supposed to send Elix over the top rope, and then AJ almost breaks his legs on the barricade when he dives over it, Skipper. And then, like, setting up for the top rope hurricanrana at the end, like, I'm not sure if the Naturals, one of the Naturals was supposed to, like, stop it, and then they, like, figured out, oh, Siaki, no, you're supposed to go in and get him off of there so he can hit the move. So it was just a awkward final sequence there. I gave it 2 stars, a little higher than Ben, but it wasn't anything amazing. It gets 2 stars because AJ helped get it 2 stars.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I'd probably go a star and a half with Jake. Nothing horribly bad, but just, yeah, like generic and bland, kind of like y'all said. But yeah, Styles definitely brings it, despite the competition that he's in there with. So yeah, Styles really showed out in this one for sure. But after this, we get our first final resolution ad, as well as a tag team of the year ad, kind of telling everybody to vote for who they think the tag team of the year is, even though I think it's a fairly obvious vote, but that's out there on TNA.com for the fans to vote for. We then get an interview with Mike Tenay and Roddy Piper. Piper opens the interview with saying nothing like La Bamba on Christmas, and I was like, gee whiz, you had to bring up the racism we had to deal with last time. Piper is going to join us at Final Resolution. I believe he's going to be a special ref in one of the matches that will eventually get announced. Piper then says he has the same goal as Dusty, and that's to take TNA to the top. Dusty has apparently fired Terry Funk from the championship committee. So Terry Funk, we barely knew ye, but he's taken out of the championship committee, and Piper has been added into his spot. Dusty has apparently also named Piper TNA's enforcer to bring law and order whenever Dusty thinks things might be getting out of control. Piper then says he'll slap anyone upside the head that gives him any problems and looks forward to doing it. Jake, what'd you think of this Piper interview?
I had the same thing about Funk as you, Logan. Like, he was fired. Did we? I don't even think we ever saw him, did we?
No,
we
saw... he never showed.
The long tenure of Terry Funk and TNA. Yeah, it was just normal kind of Piper nonsense. Like, at one point he said something about, like, he's going to be the enforcer, and so he's going to have to reforce what's going on. I don't know. Like, he just talks out of his ass. That's all he does. Like, I don't know. He hasn't been good in TNA, Piper.
Yeah, to say the least, to say the least. Ben, what'd you think of Piper here?
Oh, I need you to think, like, leave the memories alone about Terry Funk at TNA.
Leave the memories alone.
Thank you. There we go.
Remember you.
I think one of you guys mentioned it on one of the previous episodes, like, they're letting Piper do, like, his 96 WCW thing where he just rambles on, hopefully makes the point they want him to make. But like you say, this was just racist nonsense, and it's obviously just going to lead to him being quote unquote special guest ref in a match that we don't particularly want to see.
Yeah, very true. Lewis, what do you think of Piper here?
Yeah, no, it was just rambling garbage nonsense. At one point, he says, like, Dusty has to bring in someone who can bring a shillelagh into the ring to smack some heads. And I think Piper's thing is, like, he's Scottish, but a shillelagh's Irish because of Pitt Finley. But I don't know. And, yeah, he got lost in his own words so many times, like saying reforce instead of enforcer. Like, he's trying to say smack some heads and slap some heads and kind of combine the words there. Give Piper a very strict, very small script and let him stick to it, because this ain't it.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely popped for the shillelagh mention, but I thought that was kind of a different thing. So yeah, definitely weird, definitely crazy, like Piper always is. So I hope he kind of doesn't stay around very long, but we'll see. But we go straight from there into our next match. It's going to be Christopher Daniels versus Michael Shane. Kind of our first weird heel versus heel matchup, but maybe Daniels is kind of leaning more towards tweener, but we'll get on into the match. To start, they kind of constantly trade reversals. Eventually, they trade some arm drags as well. Daniels attempts to gain the advantage using an eye rake, but he runs against the ropes, only to be tripped by Kaz, because Kaz is on the outside. Posey then throws Kaz out of the arena, so it's just Tracy at ringside with Michael Shane at this point. While Shane is distracted by this, Daniels runs him into the guardrail. Daniels then gets him back into the ring, where he wears him down with some heavy strikes. The two then start to kind of trade some strikes back and forth, but Daniels ends up hitting an STO. He then goes for Angel's wings, but gets backdropped. Shane then hits him with two big clotheslines and two big power slams. Shane then goes to the top, but he gets hit with a strike and a power slam to the mat. Daniels then hits some big strikes, and then he actually hits the best moonsault ever. But Shane actually kicks out, which was kind of a surprise to me. But the two then kind of hit each other with a double clothesline. After this, Tracy kind of tries to distract the ref, where both men kind of go for illegal pins, kind of using the tights, using the ropes. But there's no count due to the distraction. Shane eventually gets pissed and kind of goes over to yell at Tracy, and then Daniels rolls them up and actually uses the tights and cheats for the win. So Daniels gets the win over Michael Shane here. Lewis, what do you think of this Daniels Michael Shane match?
I thought it was interesting to see, like, Daniels on his own during a singles match. Shane, not Daniels, but yeah. Daniels too, now he's on his singles career. But I don't know, it was decent back and forth. I kind of liked the end sequence with, like, the referee being distracted and, like, the double roll-ups, and then Daniels comes in, rolls him up again, does hold the tights, which is, like, a heel thing to do. So it's, like, hinting that Daniel solo run's going to be a heel run. But, I mean, it was unexpectedly good for such a random match, in my opinion. I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was very down-the-middle match.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what'd you think?
I'm going back from what Lou said. I thought this was a really good match. But I shouldn't be surprised, because Daniels is absolutely fantastic and on the tear at this point. Right at the beginning of the match, so I don't know if you all picked up on Tanay, Mike and Don getting very excited about the change of hours for Impact. We're moving up an hour, and there's replays. It's like, yes, I can watch this when I'm pissed or soon on a Saturday night. Come on. the match itself was really, really good. I did make no random match, but I certainly wasn't complaining about it. I love the little Uranage and the best moonsault ever as well. That was fab. I went 2 3/4 on it.
Yeah, sure. Jake, what did you think?
I wasn't quite as high on it. It was a fine match for me. I gave it the gentleman's 2. I thought it was, I thought it was a pretty good kind of match. It was a weird dynamic, though, especially, I think the thing is, like, with Daniels just splitting off and you're trying to establish, like, what he's going to be as a singles wrestler, I thought it was strange to put him with Shane, who is, like, a pretty clear heel. So to have Daniels with him, because it kind of seemed like they were leaning heel with Daniels. But as we're going to see, like, later, he's on commentary. I don't know. It's kind of weird that it's kind of like you said, Logan, they're not really going strong either way with it, which I don't know how I feel about that. I feel like maybe they should kind of pick a lane. But, yeah, I thought it was fine. And I don't know if it's just that kind of dynamic threw me off a little bit. One thing I noted, too, is that they definitely seem to be wanting to push Tracy face, like, now that she's kind of in line with Dusty. They definitely are quickly trying to get her away from Kaz and Shane and make her more of a face character. But, yeah, I thought it was okay. The roll-up spot was a little bit weird. I was kind of shocked that he actually hit the BME, because the BME is almost becoming like a lion salt territory, where it has like a 10% completion rate. But yeah, I thought it was a fine match. Maybe not as high as the other guys, though.
Yeah, I gotcha. I think Daniel's tendencies are obviously heel, but I think the crowd's super behind him, so maybe they'll kind of that'll really show out in one of our later matches that we'll talk about. But I think maybe they'll have to transition him kind of to be a face eventually. But he's kind of hanging in the middle, because he kind of wrestles like a heel, but like I said, the crowd's kind of behind them for the most part. But I went 2.5 on it. I thought it was pretty good. You know, Michael Shane hadn't really been doing much lately, but seeing Daniels kind of break out into this singles run that he's about to go on is always great to see. And he really stood out, and Shane hung with him. So I really like this match as well. After this, we go to the back where Hector Garza is slowly walking around what appears to be like a garage area or something like that. And he walks past 2 people wearing sombreros and like ponchos sitting on a bench with their heads down. These 2 people end up being Hall and Nash. So for some reason, they're sitting randomly in the garage area with ponchos and sombreros on. So another little
because
bit of casual
TNA racism.
Another bit of casual racism by TNA there. So, after that, we go to our next match. It's going to be Marco Cordova, and he's kind of led out to the ring by Kid Cash, and he will be taking on Dustin Rhodes. My first note on this match is Dustin Rhodes' music is probably the worst, worst piece of music I've ever heard in my life. It's just like banjo sounds, and it sounds awful. And on top of that, he looks like an absolute idiot in all the leather that he's wearing. So terrible, terrible music, terrible outfit. Cash provides kind of an early distraction, and then Cordova gets some offense in, but kind of it's short-lived. From there, Rhodes kind of dominates, eventually hitting him with his big twisting power slam to get the win. Cash then comes in and jumps him after the match, but I quickly kind of warded off, and Rhodes ends up being on top. Jake, what did you think of this Rhodes squash?
Yeah, it was a squash. They're definitely trying to position Kid Cash and Dustin Rhodes. I had his gear as kind of like he's kind of trying to wear like the old like Terry Funk, how Terry Funk would wear like the Clint Eastwood like spaghetti western sort of gear, except it's like made of leather and it looks like shit. So
much fucking leather.
Yeah, it's like we just talked about the ponchos with the Kings. It's almost like a leather poncho. Very odd fashion choice. Yeah, this is just a squash. I want a star on it. The only note I really had from this is at one point Don West says something about how Kid Cash clearly hasn't read A Christmas Carol and saw what happened in that. And I was like, well, he probably can't read. So that's probably the issue there.
Yeah, he does say crumpany, so I mean, and you know, yeah. he's not the most well.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know if he's a very well read guy.
He's not very well spoken, so I can't imagine he's very well read either. but Ben, what'd you think of this leather matchup here?
Okay, the music I've got it as a great value country version of Suspicious Minds at the beginning. It was just I just could not get that tune out of my head. As for his look, I know you guys mentioned last week how much he looked like Nash. I described him as the Wolfpack cowboy with all that leather going on. Yeah, it was just a very basic question. And Rose's problem is he keeps doing all the gold dust offense, but because he can't, you know, wear the makeup or wear the garb, it just does not work at all.
He can't wear it yet.
Yeah.
I know Lewis is looking forward to that one. But Lewis, what do you think of this road squash?
Yeah, no, it's not very good. Dustin really doesn't have a good run in TNA ever. The music's bad, the outfit's bad. And I've always wondered in AEW, why Cody Rhodes wears those pants that he's like always having to adjust at the waistband? And I guess that's an homage to Dustin because he was doing the same thing this entire match. So the Rhodes family just can't wear pants that has a good waistline.
Yeah, he had the Kevin Nash Wolfpack pants on, but yeah, I guess it's an homage to their dad because he couldn't keep it over his gut. So, yeah, not the best squash. I'd probably go a little lower than my normal one. I'd probably give it about half a star. It was kind of a mess, but yeah, I'm not really looking forward to seeing this Cash Dustin Rhodes feud going forward, but we'll see if it produces a pretty good match at the pay-per-view or not. But we go to the back, or we go to a review package after this. It's of the stupidness that is Raven, Watts, and DDP. Just all the crap that's been happening with them lately. Just, you know, Raven kind of playing DDP and Watts against each other. After that, DDP then comes out, says there are two reasons that he came back to TNA. One is for the title, and two is to have fun with all of his buddies. Says the person he likes hanging out with the most and getting a beer with after shows is Eric Watts. Says he wants to hear him out, what seems to be Watts' problem with him. He invites him out to the ring, but then Raven's druids attack him, or attack Paige. The druids actually end up being Watts and Raven, and DDP actually ends up hitting Watts with the diamond cutter and goes for it on Raven, but Raven kind of runs away. Raven grabs the mic and says Paige ruined Watts personally and professionally, and that Paige is nothing but a snake oil salesman and can't be trusted. After this, we get a final resolution ad, a finisher of the year voting ad, as well as the kind of highlight of the announcement for the world title series of matches that are going to happen at the pay-per-view. But Lewis, what do you think of DDP's little promo here?
Yeah, nothing in this DDP Watts Raven triangle here makes sense. Like, I've never understood where this rivalry is supposed to be going. None of the stuff that happened tonight will make sense in the next episodes of Impact, where they completely flip the script again on who sides with who. It's so dumb. There's no good payoff in sight for it. It seems to be written on a whim, restarted every week backstage, and nobody knows what they're supposed to do with these three.
Yeah, it's a mess for sure. Ben, what do you think of DDP's promo here?
So we're however many weeks in, and we still don't know what's going on here. And to quote Matt Souza, yeah, we love Paige, but fuck you for bringing Eric Watts back into our life. There's absolutely no need for that at all.
Oh, absolutely not. Just an abysmal bring back of TNA here. So, Jake, what do you think of?
At least he got his drinking buddy, you know. At least he got to have fun.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I felt bad for DDP when he said that he was his favorite person to hang out with and drink with. So, so somebody put him up to that, I have to feel like. But Jake, what do you think of DDP's little promo?
Yeah, that has to be a lie. It cannot be the truth. It's impossible.
Literally,
yeah, it's
not
all. It's like. It's all incomprehensible. Like, what is he talking about? DDP's a snake oil salesman. What is he referring to? He's talking about DDP yoga or something like 10 years before. Like, what is he referring to? I don't understand. It's all so stupid. And then they look like chumps because then DDP just like whips their asses. Like they can't even like double team them and win. I don't know. They suck. This whole thing is stupid. Even though they give it like constant TV time, I still have no idea what's happening.
So. Yeah, as I just say, that they're so lost in what they're trying to do here, and it gets even worse as we go on. But yeah, just craziness and stupidness all around. after this, we get the Kings of Wrestling coming out. Jarrett grabs the mic and says, Dusty thinks he's finally come up with a master plan to dethrone him as the champion. Says about the three-way dance that they'll have. He'll defeat whoever comes out of it on the other side. Says he's going to bang DDP right back into retirement. Says he didn't he just eat Monty on Planet Jarrett? And then Monty kind of comes out doing the Charlie Brown womp 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 noise, and then calls Jarrett a blockhead. So kind of ring it back to Charlie Brown as well, and to follow Dusty's advice and to shut up. Says the only thing that will be resolved at Final Resolution is that Monty's destiny will be fulfilled. Says he will defeat DDP and the Grey Goose, Kevin Nash. And then he says he will win the three-way and the title with the pounce, period. Jake, what'd you think of this Kings of Wrestling Monty face-off?
Yeah, so it's like Jeff Jarrett comes out doing his normal kind of stuff, which is always okay. Like, he's not a terrible promo usually. It's just kind of decent. But then Monty comes out and, like, completely saves this whole segment. Like, it's crazy because they have all these stupid backstage segments and they rarely have any kind of good come from anytime they let people get on the mic and all. But when Monty comes out, he just always comes out and gives an awesome, like, wrestling promo. When a lot of people they have can't, he just has such energy. Like, I thought he completely showed up Jarrett here because Jarrett's given his normal, like, plotting, kind of boring promo. And then Monty comes out and he has all this energy and, like, all these memorable lines and stuff. And it's just really awesome. And I love this shirt too. He had, like, this, and I think it's not in this one they make fun of his shirt, but he had, like, this white lace. It almost reminded me of the puffy shirt from Seinfeld. But I don't know. He's so awesome. I love him so much. He has so much charisma, and he stands out so much on these shows when a lot of this stuff seems kind of sterile and thrown together. And he comes out and he has so much energy. He's just awesome.
Yeah, as much as Jeff Jarrett lacks in swag, Monty always brings it out and shows out with the nice outfits that he has on. He might fail us later on in this episode, but. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I made a very similar note to Jake where Jeff comes out and does sort of his 80s and 90s generic promo, and then Monty just absolutely shows him up with an energy level and spontaneity almost that, you know, you just don't see very often. The Grey Goose line popped me so hard. I'm not even kidding. I was like, it was one of those I had to like rewind it back just to make sure I heard it properly. But yeah, like, he's so good. And how they could, like, I mean, I know Lewis said it. How could they not make him world champ like yesterday? That still blows my mind even now.
Yeah, as I say, you know, I think they really missed the boat not giving him the title on that episode of Impact. I know it was right before the pay-per-view, and Jarrett with Conan kind of a big match, but, you know, he was going to be in a tag match either way, so I think you could have made the Serengeti Survival for the title and given him at least a short run, if nothing else. But, Lewis, what'd you think of this Kings of Wrestling and Monty segment?
Yeah, again, all it shows me is that Monty should have the belt. Monty is clearly, probably next to AJ, the most over person in the company. He's definitely more charismatic than Jeff Jarrett is. He has more fun in the ring and out of the ring than Jeff Jarrett does. And he's just awesome to watch. So it'll never make sense to me that he doesn't get that belt.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's hard for me to understand how they ignore the crowd reaction that he gets. I mean, especially during that title match that I just spoke about, like, he got such the crowd behind him, and, like, you know, they were just constantly cheering for him, and, you know, he gets them, I don't know if it was in this promo or the one later on, but he gets them to chant, like, next world champ, and they're all doing it, and then he says he's going to win the title, and they say, this is the champ, you know, they get him to chant, this is the champion. So, you know, yeah, the crowd's just so behind him, and it's hard to understand why the booking can't get behind him as well. But we'll see how it goes at Final Resolution. And then speaking of Final Resolution, we get another Final Resolution ad. And we also get a review of the In the Pit with Piper with Hector Garza that aired on the previous week's episode. We then get Wes and Tanae being joined by Armando Cantero of the Spanish announce team for the main event, which means we all know that Hector Garza is going to be in the main event tonight. And he is taking on Scott Hall. Hall and Nash come out wearing the sombreros and the ponchos from earlier. Before the match starts, we actually get another Final Resolution ad. Hall starts the match by stalling and kind of mocking Garza early. He gets him into the corner and hits him with some big chops. Garza then kind of reverses it and hits him with some big chops of his own. Hall then gets back on offense and really wrenches the arm and kind of smacks Garza around in the process. Garza eventually breaks out and lays in some big kicks. Garza then goes off the top rope, but Nash nails him from behind. He knocks Nash off the apron, but then turns around and Hall hits him with a really big clothesline. He hits a big fallaway slam after this. Hall then follows it by cheating, doing the abdominal stretch like he usually does, using Nash to kind of pull for extra leverage. Garza then breaks out and hits the hip toss. Hall pretty quickly gets back on top and hits a top rope back suplex. He then goes for the edge, but gets backdropped. Garza uses his speed and power to kind of take it to both Hall and Nash. He goes up to the top rope to probably hit the tornillo. I mean, he doesn't actually hit anything, but it looks like he's going for the tornillo. But Hall knocks him down and actually hits the edge and gets the win. After the match, Piper comes out and looks to be ready to whip Hall and Nash's ass, but he actually gets cut off by another Final Resolution ad. So kind of a weird way to end the episode. But Lewis, what'd you think of the main event here?
Oh yeah, that match was awful. So this was the like one thing I struggled not to fall asleep during, because it was that bad. Hall has no business being in a ring anymore. Hector Garza, like, okay, he's the up-and-coming guy. He's, like, won the X Division Cup, all that stuff. But there was nothing he could do to make this match bearable in my mind. It was rough. It was a rough main event, and I'm not sure why this should have been the main event. It was just not – it was not worthy of it.
Yeah, I think they just kind of want to keep pushing Garza, and then they want to kind of put him in there with a quote-unquote main event star. So they figure they'd throw him with one of the Kings of Wrestling. And I don't know how limited Nash is at this point. So
I think it would have been more interesting to do, like, Garza versus Jarrett, and, like, maybe during the match there'd be, like, some friction between Nash and Jarrett that, like, almost cost Jarrett the match, but then he gets the upper hand at the last second against Garza. And then have, like, Monty run in and do all the, like, brawl stuff, and don't cut out the brawl with a promo at the end. Like, there are different ways they could have done it than put Hall in a ring.
Yeah. It was definitely a weird way to end the show. But, Ben, what did you think of this match?
So, the first of all, the final resolution, as I don't know if it's been mentioned already, like, all the guys in it are quite sort of, they've got a quite nice bit of charisma going and, you know, doing the fake happy smiley thing. And then you get to Jeff Hardy, who I think is obviously taking some good shit before the right before the promo, because he's climbing the corporate ladder. Like, just well read, Jeff, well done. As for the match was perfectly fine, I thought. I think Lewis has been slightly harsh on it. It was a perfectly fine TV main event. Am I the only one who hates the mixed commentary of the Spanish and the English?
No, I do.
whoever signed off on that and thought that was a good idea deserves a slap. But I went two stars on it. It wasn't great, but it was a perfectly fine TV main event.
My favorite part is, you know, Quintero's over there going, oh, blah, 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 and then Don West is like, totally, man, I definitely get you.
And I like as well how Mike sort of asks questions and then the guy goes off on Spanish on him. And Mike's like, yes, that's a very good point. Like, Mike can understand every word he's saying.
Yeah, Don West is over there like, I totally agree. And it's like, you didn't understand the damn word he just said. But Jake, what do you think of this main event?
Yeah, I'm probably somewhere in between where I probably didn't think it was as awful as Lewis, but maybe not as good as Ben. I'm going to star and a half on it. I felt like when Hall was on offense, and I actually thought when he had that match with AJ, he was okay. But in this one, like, man, when he was on offense, it was kind of really plodding and boring. Though he did do some things, and I was kind of, I have this thing, like, it's the same thing you're looking at, like, late Hogan, where it's like you don't want to grade him on a curve, and just because he does something, like, okay, you're like, oh, wow, that was amazing. Like, he actually pulls out the sack of shit slam, which I was amazed that he actually was able to do it. And he does, like, but you could definitely tell, like, because even when he does the outsider's edge, he can't,
to the,
like,
edge.
He can't. I'm sorry. So I get sued here.
It's just an edge. Yeah. It's just an edge.
Like, it has to be, like, really contrived, and he has to get him off the top rope because he can't, like, lift him up. So it's really kind of exposing how limited he is. And, man, he hits that, I think he does, like, a back body drop at one point, and he has to just kind of slide down Garza's back because he cannot elevate at all. Like, he just looks, even though he does kind of try to do some things, you could just tell he just, there's nothing left in the tank. And just the whole finish is so strange. Like, all this focus on Garza, and I know they kind of play up that Hall was a factor, but it's not like he interfered that much. And as much as they've been pushing Garza, just have him lose to Hall, not even Jared or something, was just very strange. And I think when you say weird about the ending, Logan, what you mean is dumb, really stupid. It's a tape show. Why are they trying to make it seem like, oh, the tape machines are rolling, we're out of time? It's like, it's a tape show. They have Piper come out. And I feel like it's because they didn't even, like, they couldn't think of anything to do. So they're like, oh, man, something exciting happened. We couldn't think of anything exciting to actually do. So we're just going to let you come up with something in your head and not show anything, and instead show the same fucking promo we've shown 400 times.
I mean, work on my,
gonna work on my table manners.
I'm gonna be a better musician.
He is evil. We know you're not bothered, so neither are we.
Yeah, just cutting off the ending was kind of weird to me. Like, I felt like it was a really weird way to end the show. Yeah. But, like, you had literally showed it before the intros of the match, after the intros of the match, and then you showed it after the match. So it's like three back to back to back to back. So, I mean, I think we've seen it like six times in this episode alone. So, yeah, just ridiculous way to end the show. Go ahead.
I think part of my, like, really low ranking of Hall stuff is I don't have that nostalgia for Hall and Nash, so I don't care to see him at this late stage in the ring.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, and Hall's a drunken, drugged up mess at this point, and personally, obviously. So, yeah, he's not bringing his best stuff, and I think he's held down by the Elvis suit, if I'm not gonna lie.
Because he was wearing Nash ditched the Elvis suit as soon as Scott Hall. Like, that's the only thing I've got to wrestle, and I'm not showing my gut off here.
Yeah, I was like, Nash was like, man, I'm only going to wear the glasses from here on. but yeah, I'd probably go with Jake. I'd go 1.5. Hall didn't look all and out awful in this match, I don't think. But, you know, it definitely was kind of slow and plodding. And he took a lot of control in the match. And I kind of thought it was weird that they didn't put Garza over here. I feel like Hall is the one that they could probably put him over here with in the situation. Maybe if he fought Jarrett again, or maybe if he fought Nash, I can understand him losing. But, kind of putting him down here is kind of a weird one to me personally. But Jake, what did you think of this first episode, and what would you score it out of 10?
I did not think this was a very good one. like, so much filler, not very well paced. I didn't even the one match that everyone else seemed to like a decent bit, I thought was just okay. The main event was not good. Nothing really happened. The highlight for me was the Monty promo, which was about 90 seconds. So I went 3 out of 10 on this one. Just not a whole lot redeeming on this one for me.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of where Jake is. I liked a couple of the matches a little bit better. So I went a little higher. I went 4 out of 10, but like we said, like the very beginning, you know, this is very much a show in a holding pattern. It's a holiday show. You're not going to miss anything by not watching it. The couple of matches were okay, but, you know, like you say, you know, you got 5 final resolution ads. You got 3 of the year-end award ads. It's just like, just stop beating us over the head with it already.
Oh, the year-end award ads only get worse as we go, so... I've got
things to say when we get there, don't we?
Okay, I can't wait to hear them. since this episode was a little bit longer, I gotta go to Lewis. Lewis, what'd you think of the show? Sorry.
About the same thing. I'd probably give it 3.5 stars out of 10, just because there really wasn't anything too exciting. There was one good match, in my opinion, and not a lot of like real good development of the storylines. Like the Watts Raven DDP stuff made no sense. Cutting off the end of the show made no sense. So it was not a good Impact.
Yeah, I gotcha. I'd probably go around Jake and go with 3 out of 10. Yeah, just not the strongest episode. Didn't really seem like they had their shit together on this one. Kind of flipped and flopped and was in some bad situation. There was a couple of good matches, but, you know, the road squash wasn't very good. The main event was kind of, you know, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't the greatest way to close the show. Definitely not one of the stronger episodes we've seen so far. Since we've kind of gone long in this first half, I think we'll take a break right now, and we'll be back on the other side. Place to be Nation, welcome back to the second half of our show, where we will be looking at the January 7th and the January 14th episodes of Impact. We open the January 7th episode where they show us Jeff Hammond being trained by 3 Live Crew, and apparently Shane and Kaz are in there insulting him, making some NASCAR jokes, saying you can only turn left so many times or something to the effect of that, but... apparently, Jeff Hammond's being trained for some kind of contest eventually. but we'll see where that leads, I guess. Tanae kind of welcomes us into the Impact Zone and says we'll hear from Jeff Jarrett tonight. And we will also see AJ Styles and Petey in action in separate contests. Tonight, they are joined by Christopher Daniels on commentary. They say he'll face Chris Sabin next week in a Ultimate X qualifier. The winner will join AJ Styles and Petey in the Ultimate X match for the X Division Championship at Final Resolution. Daniels kind of ends this little bit with saying he'll submit his spot at the top of the X Division. So he'll kind of, you know, make his name known, and he'll put himself atop the X Division. But we start out with our first match with AJ Styles, and he's taking on the random out of nowhere appearance of Chris Candido. So Chris Candido's coming in here at TNA. My first note is Candido looks kind of old and bloated at this point, but as we'll go throughout the match, he kind of still has it in the ring a little bit. So Candido opens the match up, getting the better of an exchange, and kind of, you know, cockily slaps AJ around in the face. He then kind of gets shoved all the way across the ring by AJ. AJ then uses his speed to kind of frustrate Candido, who then slips outside of the ring. AJ then comes over and crossbodies him on the outside. Candido does an absolutely late and absolutely absurd sell job on this. He's like laying on the ground, and then he all of a sudden decides he's going to put his legs through the barricade. I thought it was insane and really stupid looking. Candido eventually catches AJ kind of being cocky, like he had been caught doing earlier, and hits him with some big chops. He then takes Styles to the top rope and hits a top rope atomic drop. Not one you regularly see, so I thought that was kind of an innovative spot. Candido then shows some great strength with an awesome snap suplex, as well as a delay suplex. Candido then gets kind of cocky again and starts slapping AJ around and taunting him. Styles then fires up and hits some big shots, eventually hitting the phenomenal dropkick. Candido once again kind of catches Styles off guard and hits a big twisting power slam. Candido then goes up to the top, but gets caught and kind of power slammed off. And then after a couple of reversals, Styles actually ends up hitting the Styles Clash and gets the win. Jake, what'd you think of this Styles-Candido match?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought Candido didn't look half bad in this. Like you said, it's kind of sad given, I think at this point he would only been like in his early 30s, like 32 or 33. So, but he does look a little puffy, but he can still go. Like, his selling, like you mentioned, is kind of absurd at some points, but I'm kind of here for it, especially given kind of the dull performances we've seen by kind of other noted guys that they just kind of bring in randomly. I thought he looked pretty good, like bumping around. Like when AJ pushes him, he just flies all over the place. AJ hits, like, that dive AJ hit was fucking sick. That was a great AJ dive. He's bumping his ass off too, and I kind of just like the whole energy of this match. They were both bumping. I liked AJ's comeback. I thought was really good, and to prove that kind of he can go, Candido does take the Styles Clash, which I thought was pretty cool of him to come out and take that. So I kind of enjoyed this as a match. I don't know, I thought it was pretty fun. I went 2 stars on it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was really shocked by how, I mean, like, once Candido came out, I was like, oh, this might be rough. And then he actually took the Styles Clash, so I was really impressed by that. Ben, what do you think of this one?
If you think I'm not going to talk about the opening to this show, Logan, you're very much mistaken, because much like a drum solo at a Phil Collins concert, the end result is inevitable. We all know it's coming, and I might just not make it to the February pay-per-view if I know I've got to watch Jeff Hammond match. As for the match, when it comes to Candido and TNA, it's kind of like watching when Louis Piccoli was in WCW, because, you know, sadly the sands of time are going on Candido, and it's kind of, not to get too depressed, but that's kind of the point I'm at with it. I actually really like the match. I went 2.5 on it. AJ did a great carry job on Candido, and he more than held up his end of the bargain. Like you say, for a guy you thought was a bit pudgy, a bit old, he took that Styles Clash superbly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Lewis, what did you think of this opener?
Yeah, so like we were talking in the break, in between episodes here, I had no idea who Candido was. I had no like frame of reference for him beforehand. So when I saw him walking down the ramp and I saw he was going against AJ, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be like a 1 minute squash. So it completely blew me away to see what that match developed into. And like the Shane Daniels match from the last show, this had no real reason to be just a really good, decent match, but it was. And yeah, seeing Candido take the Styles Clash when I thought he was just going to get jobbed out and maybe like lose to a springboard move or something or a drop kick. That was a really decent, strong opening match.
Yeah, I got you. What kind of star rating would you give it?
I think I'd give it 3. I think it was a like normal match that what it wasn't extraordinary by any means, but there was no reason to drop it below an average rating there.
Yeah, I got you. I'd probably go 2.5 on it. I was really impressed by Candido here. And Styles obviously is awesome and brings it every time. But yeah, Candido's kind of a solid hand here. So I'm kind of hoping they keep him around. He has a match in our next episode. So they at least keep him around for that. I think he eventually becomes a manager of a tag team. But we'll kind of see where he goes from this point. After this, we go to the back. And we are with Douglas and JB. And they give out a few of the 2004 awards. The most memorable moment is the tightrope Hurricane Rana from the cage match. The X Division star of the year is AJ Styles. Match is also the cage match at Turning Point. And then Mr. TNA, who embodies the TNA name the most, is also AJ Styles. So they give out those four while we're after this match that we just talked about. We also get another final resolution ad as well as some highlights from some previous Ultimate X matches. We are then shown Johnny Fairplay and Trinity. They show up to Dusty's quote-unquote office, his pickup truck in the garage. Trinity looks like an absolute doofus and almost falls while she's getting into the into the truck. But Tracy finds a note, and nothing else really happens. They say something that the note says, but it's leading to something at the pay-per-view, apparently. Lewis, what'd you think of the award winners and kind of this little Johnny Fairplay, Trinity, Tracy segment?
The award winners were easily predictable, but like it's good to see that like these guys are getting recognition for being just the top of the top. Not only in TNA, but like America's Most Wanted and AJ Styles are at the top of, at this time period, any promotion, in my opinion. They're like up there at the top, not necessarily at the top, but it's good to see them get recognized for it. It was cool that, I'm sure the results were rigged, but it was cool that TNA set up a thing for like fans to go vote on to get some fan participation in it. And then when you get to the like Tracy, Trinity, Johnny Fairplay stuff, that was stupid. That it's unnecessary. Why are you giving airtime to these people? when's the last time AJ Styles has had a promo, like a backstage interview or something?
Been a long time.
Yeah, but you're giving Johnny Fairplay, Trinity, and Tracy airtime. Good call there, Dusty.
Oh, I'm not sure it's all on Dusty, but it's ridiculous. But Ben, what'd you think of the award winners and this Fair Play Trinity Tracy segment?
Well, the award winners were like easily predictable, if not rigged, that's fine. But that segment just reinforced how much I hate Shane Douglas in this role. Oh my god. It's everything about him. He's trying too hard to be like the 90s Shane Douglas, and in 2004 he just looks like a sad old man. It's like, you know, and he says things like "you fans voting for it," and he says it with such like disdain, and it's like I'm not like a mark here, but it's like if you weren't for the band, Shane, you'd still be teaching in Philadelphia. So let's not like, you know, we're do it then. And then the other thing when he says about, you know, Mr. TNA is Mr. Phenomenal One, AJ Styles. Whoever's called him Mr. Phenomenal One in his life, nobody. Nobody has ever said that phrase, Shane. Shut up. as for the Tracy stuff, yeah, it's stupid. It's daft. I have no clue who Johnny Fairplay is. I had to Google. It was a Survivor thing. Survivor means a square root of fuck all over here, so... I have no idea who that guy is. He was there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What's the big British reality TV?
So at this time period, it would have been Big Brother at this stage.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotcha. Douglas tries to act like great value Doc Hendricks, and that's saying something because that's but Jake, what'd you think of the award winners, and what'd you think of the Johnny Fairplay Tracy stuff?
Yeah, I think the issue I have with the award winners, it's fine and all, but it just kind of, I think the problem is they do so many of these like video packages like that, like for the pay-per-views and stuff, that it kind of makes me sort of space out when they do the award winners. And like the guys have said, it's kind of, I know who's probably going to win anyway. Maybe they've been better. I mean, I don't think it's the greatest thing in the world, but if you're going to do Johnny Fairplay backstage segments, you could almost do maybe like have the guys get the awards like in a promo and let them cut a promo, or maybe use that to build some feuds where like somebody's pissed they didn't win, like a heel's mad they didn't win or something, because it just feels kind of canned, like, oh, so-and-so had the best, you know, AJ is the best. It's like, yep, we kind of knew that. But the Johnny Fairplay stuff was, I don't know, it was just dumb. Lewis made a good point. Like, and it's kind of my issue with their TV. It's like the little time they do give to trying to build anything, they decide to give it to this instead of anything of any value. It's very strange. Like, and it's not even, like, I'm even fine when they do stuff that's like these, like, Abyss with the shrimp and stuff, where they at least make it like so over the top and ridiculous that it's entertaining. Like, this was just boring. I don't know, nobody in this was funny or compelling or interesting. It was just like them dicking around the back of a truck, and it was boring. I don't know.
Hey, remember months ago when Johnny Fairplay had that like open invite to any reality star to show up to TNA? That paid out so well.
Yeah, I was saying, most people probably forget that happened. The award winners were, I think fairly obvious. I don't know if it was super rigged, because I think the fans would have honestly voted for all four of those things. Maybe giving X Division star to somebody that's not AJ might have done that person's career a little bit better, but maybe give it to Petey. Mr. TNA, I feel like definitely should have gone to Styles. But I'm going to play a little bit of trivia here with this next match. It's going to be Petey Williams and Jake. What member of the Naturals did he take on?
He faced Andy Douglas. Credit to the Fox Box, baby. Credit to the Fox Box.
Yeah, before you got on earlier, I said I was going to put a trivia question up to see if anybody knew who he faced in this match, because y'all always struggle with which natural is which.
You know the really sad thing? Logan said the name before the show, and just then when he asked the question, I genuinely did not remember the answer.
That's just sad. We get Petey versus Andy Douglas here. It's another kind of weird heel versus heel match. So it kind of makes Petey's kind of the de facto face somehow. So Demora kind of has to play face in peril at certain points. But they trade headlocks early. And at one point, they actually eye poke each other at the same time. I thought that was a pretty funny and kind of weird spot. Petey is then able to take advantage, kind of laying in some big strikes. Douglas then catches Petey coming off the rope and hits him with an atomic drop. Stevens actually pulls a Damore and actually nails Petey with a punch. Damore then kind of charges after him, but quickly retreats. And then as he's retreating, he almost kind of busts his ass, tripping over the steps. He actually ends up catching himself, but he almost had a big blowout there. Back in the ring, Petey kind of catches Douglas sleeping with a couple of shots, but ultimately gets hit with a Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker. Petey is able to then reverse a slingshot attempt and hit his little Hurricane Rana into a Russian leg sweep. He then goes for a Canadian destroyer, but ends up getting dumped to the outside. Petey then gets up a boot in the corner and then goes for the Canadian destroyer once again. But Stevens actually distracts until DeBoer is able to pull him down off the apron. And then through it all, Petey actually rolls up Douglas and has the tights, and he actually gets the win there. Lewis, what did you think of this Petey Douglas match?
I enjoyed it okay. It wasn't as good as some of the other matches. It's fun to see two heels go against each other. I wish they would do that more often, like have two faces go against each other, two heels go against each other. It doesn't always have to be the babyface heel combo. And yeah, it was fun to like sit there thinking, okay, who do I want to win this match? Obviously PD, because he's a much better wrestler, but like just thinking heel to heel, I don't want Scott D'Amore to interfere with the match, but I don't want other natural to interfere with the match. it was fun. The double eye poke was fun, and I gave it 2.5 stars just for being a decent exhibition match.
Gotcha. Ben, what did you think?
The naturals are sounding a bit like the conquistadors, there, aren't they? Natural number two.
Outside natural.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but right at the very beginning. So when I was doing my notes for this, I actually wrote down Petey Williams and the Naturals, and then I was like, but the graphics even came up saying the Naturals, so it made it look like the tag team was going to be involved. So I was like, oh, so it is going to be Douglas. And like Jake said, I was so happy that the Fox Box had the title there, so now I could finally, after 6 months, tell them apart. That was rather nice of Fox, so thank you very much. I like the match. It was, I think I went two and a quarter on it. It was good. It was perfectly fine. Yeah, I felt it was a bit weird with the PT playing face, like you say, D'Amore like interfering, but you know, them trying to make it out like it was a good thing was very, very odd. But yeah, I'm surprised you didn't mention the ref botch either, Logan. I don't know if it was your man Posey, but that was quite spectacular. The ref botch at the end where, you know, he's won, has he? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird kick out botch thing, but yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think it probably was Posey actually, so not a shock there at all. Jake, what do you think?
I'm actually going to bail Posey out on this one because I don't think it was on him. I think it's on Andy Douglas, who I know very well. If you showed me a picture of him, I could definitely pick him out of a lineup of both naturals.
Jake, what's the other natural's name?
Oh, Chase Stevens.
You're playing natural.
I know the names. I know the names. I just don't know what the fuck they look like.
One might call this game natural selection.
Which one is it? It's the one with the greasy hair. That's the one. But yeah, I think so. I didn't enjoy this match very much, and I think it's really on Mr. Andy Douglas, as we call him, Mr. Andy Douglas. I just don't think it's a good pairing because he just can't, as we've talked about, the naturals are kind of stiffs, and he just cannot work Petey's style. And like I always say, they suck when they have to be on offense, and then he just can't do like Petey's style of match. So you get a lot of weird moments where Petey's trying to work his like super quick athletic style, and Andy Douglas just can't really keep up. And I feel like that's what happened with the finish, and that's why I kind of bail Posey out, is because, you know, Petey kind of goes, and I'm assuming they had to go with this because Andy Douglas can't take the Canadian destroyer, so they have to do something else instead. And so they kind of go for this like sequence at the end, and Douglas can't really do it. And so to me, the match just felt really disjointed because he couldn't keep up with Petey and do the kind of match that Petey, and it's a weird kind of size difference too with these two, because the naturals are kind of low key big ass dudes, like, or at least tall. And Petey's kind of small, so that's kind of a weird dynamic. And so it was a styles clash, I guess. Like, the heel part of it didn't bother me much. Like, heel, it was just like these two, I feel like didn't mesh just because he couldn't keep up. So I only want a star on it. I did not like it very much.
Wow. I got you. I would have loved to have seen him try to attempt the Canadian Destroyer in this one, see how horribly botched it would end up being. But I thought it was a pretty solid match. I didn't think it was great by any means, but I thought Petey held it together pretty well, and Douglas didn't look, you know, I didn't think he looked that bad, but I'd probably go 2 on it.
I'm trying to get that Taco Bell money on.
Yeah,
trying to get on Sean's good side.
You have to get in Sean's good graces here. So, yeah, all the natural shitting. I think you're starting to win some points. So, they're usually pretty bad, but I didn't think he was all out bad in this one. But I thought Petey put together a pretty good match, and I would have loved to have seen how botched the Canadian Destroyer would have been if they had actually tried to hit it.
I think whisper it quietly, but Sean might have been right about the naturals.
Yeah, unfortunately. he has to be right about some things, I guess. You know, he only has so many lane lanes out there.
Even a broken clock's right twice today, you know what I mean?
Very true. Very true. He's still old though, so he's got that.
You'll always have that.
But after this match, we get two final resolution ads. We get kind of the Jarrett stuff with his three world title contenders, as well as a Team Canada AMW hype. We then go back to Shane Douglas, and he is with America's Most Wanted. Harris says AMW and Triple X, that saga is over. It's dead. It's done. Says they'll now focus on being the champs again, being the six-time champs that they will hope to eventually be. Team Canada is at the top of their most wanted list, is what he says. Storm then says no team can take them out, and Team Canada can bring all the members that they want, but that they will be in a fight, and AMW is going to win it. Jake, what'd you think of this AMW promo?
It was kind of their standard promo, which is usually pretty good and fiery. I do think that Storm is the stronger on the mic. I think Harris can kind of come off as a little bit stilted and kind of wooden in his promo, but Storm is really, really good. I enjoy when he's on there. I feel like they should kind of let him be the focus, and I kind of get what they're doing because this is sort of the like an old school way of doing where you have both guys kind of chime in equally. But I do feel like they should lean more on Storm because I do think he's a bit better.
Yeah, I feel like Harris is never really confident on the mic, and I feel like Storm, he might say something stupid, but he's totally confident with what he's eventually going to say. I do miss the Mama Storm wisdoms that he used to put out a few months ago. But Ben, what do you think of this AMW promo?
Yeah, I really like this. I really like the promo. I'm with you guys. Storm's basically there sort of holding Harris's hand through these promos, isn't he? Like, crazy old man Storm is great. I just love him.
Absolutely. Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, same thing. Like, Storm's been great. I'm ready to see what comes next for them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to that Team Canada match that they'll have at Final Resolution. I think they had a pretty good match a couple weeks ago on Impact, and I think if given a little bit more time, they could have an even better match. So, I'm looking forward to that one for sure. Rude then takes on Chris Sabin in our next match. Bobby Rude of Team Canada takes on Chris Sabin. To start the match, Sabin kind of catches Rude charging as he kind of tries to attack him from behind. He then uses kind of his speed and a Hurricane Rana to kind of frustrate Rude early. He hits a pretty awesome springboard dropkick at one point. Rude then catches him with a flapjack into the ropes, followed by a neckbreaker. Rude then uses his strength and big strikes to kind of wear down Sabin. Rude throughout the match really lets the crowd kind of frustrate him. Anytime they get a big chant going, Rude kind of acts real pissed off. Sabin kind of breaks out of a neck wrench at one point and does a Hurricane Rana into a schoolboy, but only gets two. He then hits an atomic drop and a big enziguri. Sabin then goes for the cradle shock, but Daniels actually gets up from commentary. He's still been at commentary this whole time. He rushes in with a chair, Saban then kind of wards Daniels off, but the chair ends up still in the ring, and D'Amore distracts the ref, and Rude absolutely clobbers Saban with a lariat, and he falls face first onto the chair. So Rude slides the chair out of the ring and actually gets the pin. Jake, what'd you think of this Rude-Saban match?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. It just wasn't very long to really get a whole lot going. Like, I liked the energy they had. I actually thought the interference spot was pretty well done compared to what we normally see. And they, like, they usually kind of lead on more lazy spots. But, yeah, I won a star and a half, but not really because I didn't enjoy what they did. I just feel like it wasn't really enough to be much of a match.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what'd you think?
I went 2 stars. I did like the end. I thought it was really well done, really well set up. It actually felt like a natural interference spot, not contrived. I also liked how Mike tried to bring back up Chris Sabin, counter move magician, and Daniels basically just shot him down and said, "Yeah, well, he might know that counter, but he doesn't know all of mine, does he?" and it really builds into next week. I thought very well.
Yeah, absolutely. Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, I also went 2 stars on it. I thought this was a very, like Ben said, fluid way of getting Daniels over as the heel at, singles comparer that he's going to be for right now. I thought it was actually a pretty cool finish with Rude's clothesline and then Saban's face hitting the chair after the clothesline instead of just like doing a regular chair shot. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, it builds towards that match between Daniels and Saban, and I'm really looking at this point. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely does a good lead into the Saban style or Saban Daniels match we have next week. Yeah, I thought Rude looked pretty good here, using some big power moves that he had, and Saban obviously used the speed to kind of frustrate him early and kind of frustrated him throughout the match. But yeah, I kind of agree. It didn't have enough time to really be what I think it could have been. I think it could have been a really great match if they had been given a little bit more time, but I understand that it's kind of not in the highest of the pecking order, on this episode of Impact as it goes. So, but I'd probably go 2 stars on it as well. I think it was a fairly solid match with 2 pretty good competitors. So, I would love to see them get a little bit more time in the future and, maybe go at it again. But after this, we get our other awards that we are giving out right now. Knockout of the Year goes to Tracy. Finisher of the Year actually ends up being the Canadian Destroyer. I was cheering for the Pounce, but, you know, the Canadian Destroyer is awesome as well. The Superstar to Watch is Garza, which is super ironic, as we will get to later. And then the Team of the Year is America's Most Wanted, and the least shocking vote of the time. I know everybody was voting for the New York Connection, but they fall short of the AMW here.
my write-in vote for Bad and Siaki didn't get there in time, I don't think.
Damn it, boy. Yeah, I was cheering for NYC there, but they couldn't quite pull it out. but we go straight from there into our next match, and it's going to be David Young versus Conan of Three Live Crew. I wonder why TNA put us through this, but but Conan says Young couldn't be a star even if he was thrown one by a ninja, so he couldn't even be a star if a ninja threw a star at him. So and that's the last time a star will be mentioned throughout this match. Young then kind of jumps him after he turns around. David then gets about a minute of offense, and then Conan obviously hits his big strikes and then his Rolling Thunder clothesline. Young actually gets an elbow up on a charge in the corner and gets another clothesline, so he actually gets a little bit more offense, which kind of shocked me. He starts taunting BG James and actually spits at him at one point, but a BG eventually gives him a right hand. Conan then hits a DDT, and the BG kind of has the ref distracted, so him and Truth hit the, you know, I call it the what's up drop kick because it kind of looks like, or the leg drop, sorry. What's up leg drop, because it kind of looks like what the Dudleys do, but they do a leg drop instead. And then Conan hits the K-Factor for the win. Lewis, what did you think of this Conan squash?
Zero stars. It had Conan and David Young.
Yeah,
there's no point to it. They're both horrible. I don't understand how you bring back David Young when you finally got rid of him a month or two ago. You have good talent on this roster. Why are you doing this shit? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's...
Like, did Conan need a singles squash match, really? Conan? Are you sending him on a singles run anytime soon?
God, I hope not, but you never know. Ben, what'd you think?
The match went 2 minutes and 5 seconds, which was at least 2 minutes too long. Dud.
I guess you could say it was 205 live then.
Oh, my God.
Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, gotta keep K-Dog strong, baby. You never know. David Young. David Young is like if you go to like a bar in the South, there's always like some like loud, stupid douchebag guy like in the bar. That's David Young. But I thought they kind of looked weak, like 3LK. They had to like they were like triple teaming fucking David Young. Like Conan can't handle David Young on his own. He needs the boys to back him up.
Yeah, that's also a fair point.
I thought they looked like some chumps, like triple demon David Young, who literally never won a match his entire career. And the yeah, it sucked. I went, yeah, dud, trash.
I'd say I feel sorry for David Young, but it's David Young.
See, the problem is K-Dog only has like 3 moves in his arsenal, and he broke all 3 of them out earlier in the match, so he needed somebody else to come in and hit some moves so he could actually put together the rest of the match. So, this is a dud. Like I said, no stars will be given to the rest of this match, so the Ninja Star at the beginning is the only one that will be given. But then we go to the back after this match, and... I guess we get the reveal that Raven has kind of been playing Watts and DDP against each other for what I do not know. They were kind of revealed that there's no real conflict and that Raven just kind of created some stuff to kind of get them to snipe back and forth at each other. Watts then comes in and kind of attacks Raven from behind and then takes him out into the arena and just pretty much destroys him with a trash can. And then he and DDP make up. So, you know, just, I mean, this storyline's been so stupid for the longest time, and then now just the most unsatisfying, stupid ending, because we don't even really figure out what the whole thing was about, just that Watts has been ruined personally and professionally, so whatever that means to anybody, I guess, more power to you if you care about that, but I do not. But Jake, what'd you think of the reveal of nothing that happened between Raven, DDP, and Watts?
Well, with all the build, I mean, who couldn't have saw it coming that he's going to turn on Raven, right? I mean, all the signs were there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who could have possibly seen that coming? Ben, what'd you think?
God, it was there. It was another one of those. It was there again. The headbutt was nice. I like that. That was good. But yeah, it was like it was actually the only part of this feud where you actually got a sense of what was going to happen next. At least we kind of knew what was coming here. That was something we've not had in about 5-6 weeks of this.
Oh, I didn't see this coming at all. I thought they were going to drag it out for weeks and weeks upon weeks, you know. So I'm kind of disappointed it's ending now. So,
at least we've got like Paige and Watts back together as forever friends. That's sort of thing.
Yeah, and we're going to get a Watts match with Raven out of it. So,
yay! Lewis, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, like I was saying earlier, nothing in the storyline makes sense. They literally rewrite the script every week to change who is mad at who. Like last week, DDP hits Watts with the diamond cutter, and all of a sudden that awoken Watts to realize that, oh, Raven is actually the true bad guy in all of this. it's so stupid. Who is writing this shit?
a very, very, very fucked up man who is just honestly trying to screw with us.
I can't remember who said it on your last show, Logan, but it's like, this was obvious. It was obvious, like, they were hoping that Savage was going to make come back at some point, because Paige is basically involved in both the world title and this, and they're kind of hoping that nobody's noticing the fact he's getting away from this. But sadly, we are.
Like, if M. Night Shyamalan had a stroke, these are the types of plot twists that he would write.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's probably true. but yeah, maybe this is a hanger on her from when Russo was in there. So this is just something that had to work itself out after he left. I'm kind of glad that it's worked itself out, and that maybe we'll get a match at the pay-per-view, and that'll just be it, and it'll be done. We won't ever have to deal with it again. But yeah, just nothing happened throughout this whole rivalry, and it's just so stupid, so stupid. But after this, we get a vignette for what appears to be a new superstar. I don't really know who this ends up being, but I'm kind of looking forward to seeing who this ends up being revealed to be. We then get two more final resolution ads. We get the Jarrett world title one, and then we kind of get the basic one where everybody kind of gives their New Year's resolutions. Sorry. But after this, we come back, and Tanay is in the ring. And he's going to interview Jeff Jarrett. He kind of runs through all the possible opponents from the triple threat match that Jarrett can end up facing, while the crowd is like really loudly booing Jarrett the whole time. Jarrett then says it seems that everyone has figured out a master plan to dethrone him, kind of like he said the last time. And of course, as Matt Souza mentioned, he mentions Sting and Jeff Hardy. So he mentioned Sting and Jeff Hardy like he does in every other promo that he ever has. He then goes through each of the guys that he might face. He says DDP is distracted by all the stuff that's going on with Watts and Raven. He obviously calls Monty Brown the double-A ball player. And then he says Nash knows that the Kings of Wrestling won't fall, and Dusty's plan won't come to fruition because they won't go against each other as much as Dusty kind of wants them to. We then get DDP coming out of the crowd, and Monty comes through the tunnel, and Nash is out as well, as they kind of all brawl against each other. And through it all, Jarrett accidentally nails Hall with a punch who had come out with Nash, and this pisses Nash off. You know, he gets really pissed off at Jarrett. And then refs and security kind of come out and separate all the guys as it goes kind of into another break. Lewis, what do you think of this brawl between all the world title contenders?
This I liked. I like Jeff Jarrett doing like his little promo there, kind of like crapping on everybody, and then DDP and Monty coming out. And I like that Nash came out, and originally it looked like it was going to be the two-on-two fight there, but then Nash and Jarrett start going at it. And I know Nash always says he's there for the paycheck, and he literally is just there for the paycheck. But when Nash gets angry, like, he is a giant man, and I feel like he could beat ass if he wants to beat ass. And that's what this made me think about. Like, Nash can go. At least a lot better than Hall can.
No, yeah, no doubt. Ben, what did you think?
So there's a few things I liked about this. First of all, if we were doing the fashion statement like we do on Chicken Salad on this show, like, Jeff Jarrett's outfit would win that quite easily. Mike Tenay doing some great, I think Sean calls it his Donald Trump impression. I'm going with his smug, smell the farce acting face going on when he's just doing that thing with his lips, like when he's basically asking Jarrett to punch him out. And much like you, Logan, I was as shocked as I'm sure we all were that Jeff referred to Monty as a double-A ball player. I did not see that coming at all. I'm having a bad night for not picking the signs up here. and just say as well, like, if this was modern WWE, we'd have had that tag match at the end of the show. That, you know, I was basically waiting for Dusty or somebody to come out and say, we've got a tag team main event coming up, but it never happened.
Yeah, I was gonna say if something's definitely for sure, Jarrett's gonna mention Sting, Hardy, and usually Hulk Hogan, and the AA ball player when it comes to Monty Brown. So those three are almost definitely.
Check them off your bingo yeah. cards, guys.
I was gonna say Jeff Jarrett bingo. That's it right there. But Jake, what'd you think of this Jarrett and Jarrett promo and kind of the brawl that led to afterwards?
I love how like antagonistic Mike Tenay is against Jeff Jarrett. Like he's really like everything he says, he gives these mean looks and like makes all these smart ass comments towards him. I love it. But yeah, it at least was something that built to a main event or like some major angle that they're building. Like I guess the Kings of Wrestling, we barely knew ye because they seem to be disintegrating, even though they've only been around for like 6 weeks or something. So, but it's probably for the best, I think, because I think it's run its course. They got in like 18 months of the NWO in like 3 weeks, hit all the major spots. It's like the NWO condensed down into like 2 months, the Kings of Wrestling, because they're already disintegrating. But yeah, at least I would give the fashion statement to Nash because his outfit here was like he dressed like my dad hanging around the house. He had like his relaxed fit jeans, his kind of his pocket tee on and his tennis shoes like out there. Loved it.
Is this when Jarrett was wearing like the salmon corduroy pants? Is this that outfit?
Oh yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't make note of it, but I thought that was that one. But yeah, absolutely amazing outfit. But yeah, Nash always has his casual wear on, so you can always look forward to that whenever you see him out in the ring. But after this, we go back and we get the same kind of awards from earlier, the X Division, all the ones from the first ad earlier. And then we get another Final Resolution ad. And then our last match gets introduced as Cash and Dallas as they are taking on Dustin Rhodes and Jeff Hardy, a.k.a. the Drug Addled Gang. But before the match... before the match, we get the exact same award segment that we got just 15 seconds ago on the other promo. So somehow they show the same one back to. I'm assuming they meant to show the other one, but like, I don't know at this point. I just don't know. But Jeff Hammond has also joined us for commentary for this main event match.
Yes. It's been too long, damn it.
Dang it. Yeah, Isaiah, it's been way too long since we got a 6 points of impact, so I'm glad it's back for you, Ben. But to start the match, Kid Cash and Hardy kind of start the match out, and they lock up and trade some arm locks. We get a very, very botchy start between these two. They never seem to kind of be on the same page, but that's not a shock considering at least one, if not both of the guys in the match to start off. Hardy eventually catches Kid Cash being cocky and kind of strikes him, and that allows him to tag Dustin into the match. He really kind of gives it to Cash, who quickly kind of slithers away and gets the tag into Dallas. Rhodes tries to go for Cash at some point, but Dallas actually comes from behind him and hits him with a really big boot, and then tags Cash back in so he can kind of pick up the scraps. Cash and Dallas then really wear down Dustin at this point, keeping him in their corner and kind of fending off any attempt that Rhodes tries to kind of make a comeback at any point. Cash then climbs to the top rope where Dallas is actually perched, and then he climbs on top of Dallas's shoulders, and then he attempts a moonsault but ultimately misses, and he almost like botched it and landed on his neck, so I'm kind of glad he eventually actually made the final rotation. Rhodes then kind of fires up and gives it to Cash when they get back to their feet. He eventually hits a chokeslam, and after the chokeslam he tags Hardy in, who comes in a house of fire. Hardy and Rhodes then kind of team up to take out both Cash and Dallas, and Hardy eventually hits the Swanton, and they get the win with that. And then after the match, this is the close of the show, we kind of get a confrontation between Jarrett and Nash, kind of yelling back and forth at each other as security's kind of separating them. But Jake, what did you think of this Rhodes-Hardy-Kid Cash-Dallas match and the kind of the confrontation afterwards?
it was kind of a mess. I think Kid Cash did his best. He was kind of the anchor that tried to hold this thing together, but Hardy is a mess as always. Like, they hit the DDT, that was the spot for me that was like, oh, that's like the every match he has like at least one spot that looks brutal to me. It like he takes the DDT and it's like his reaction was delayed. Like, he hits the mat on the DDT and like 2 seconds pass and then he sells it. Like, it was rough, but Cash was kind of bumping his ass off trying to make this decent, like keep it together. And I gave it a star and a half, and I really think it's all on his back because the team he was facing was not good. Dallas is kind of a stiff a little bit, so I feel like he was trying to hold it together. But, yeah, not the best main events we've been seeing on this set of episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely a weird way to close the previous show, and this was kind of a wet fart to kind of end this one. If not for the confrontation between Jarrett and Nash, it would have definitely ended horribly two episodes in a row. But Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, it felt like you know when you play like WWE 2K and you have a random tag match.
Yeah.
It just felt like that. It was like what, I mean, obviously I know Cash and Dallas are together, but what was the reason for it? It was just something good. That moonsault botch was scary. If you've not seen it, that has to be seen to be believed, because I'm not sure if it was like Dustin didn't roll out the way in time, because they made it out like he did, but he just stayed there. He didn't move a muscle. I went 1.5 on it. It was okay, but like I say, you know, just swap those two segments around and this show becomes a lot better. You know, you don't have to end every show on a match.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they definitely could have ended with a stronger match, for sure. But Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, I really thought it was, again, I don't know why they put together bad main events, but they put together bad main events, and this is just another showing of it. Like, Jeff Hardy doesn't look good in the ring, Dustin Rhodes doesn't look good in the ring, and it's random, and it's not a good way to end your shows. Like, you should be ending your shows on a high spot that, like, sends the crowd home happy, like, good matches to end the show. And TNA just hasn't been doing that. And I only gave this one 1 star.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I'd probably go 1.25 on it. It was very clunky, and like Jake said, Cash kind of held it together as much as he could. But you know, he's in there with Hardy, who's obviously a mess. Rhodes kind of hasn't gotten the hang of things yet, and he's kind of a mess as well. And Dallas is kind of a stiff, so he's not in there with the best competition. But he tries his best to kind of hold it together. But Lewis, I'll stick with you. What do you think of this second episode, and what would you score it out of 10?
I thought it was a little better than the previous episode. I still would only give it about 3.5 stars, just because it's still trying to build towards the pay-per-view. The matches were still just okay, if not outright awful. The real highlight of it was the Kevin Nash stuff and seeing him really start to like break out as the okay, this guy can hand Jarrett his shit if he wants to.
Yeah, absolutely. Ben, what'd you think?
It was better than the previous episode, but only slightly better. Like, we're only talking 4.5 out of 10, if that, to be honest. If I'd probably go 4.25 if I'm being honest. The highlight for me was Daniels on commentary. I thought he was great, and that opening 20 minutes was really good, and then it just went downhill from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with Lewis. I'm a touch higher than the last one, but just another meh, kind of not great episode. The wrestling was not particularly good. I just felt like maybe a little bit more actually happened on this one than the last one, but kind of in the same ballpark.
Yeah, I definitely agree with both of y'all. I'd go 3.5 on it. Yeah, a little bit more happened in this one, but yeah, the matches, because some of the matches left something to be desired, but there was a few solid contests in there. But the backstage segments continue to whiff, as always, or it seems like the last few weeks at least. you know, I kind of wish they wouldn't even do the backstage segments if they're going to be so clunky and stupid and bad. But I understand that you have to kind of break the matches up a little bit with something. But if you're going to do something, just go back to Tanae and Wes and let them talk about what's going on and stuff like that. We'll move on from there, and we'll go to our last episode for tonight, and it will be the January 14th episode of Impact. And we open this show with highlights of the world title brawl that we just talked about from last week, as well as the Nash and Jarrett conversation at the end of the show. To start this, Wes and Tanae kind of go through the final resolution lineup. They inform us that we'll see Elix Skipper in action. They don't say who he'll face, but that he'll be in action at the pay-per-view, as well as Hardy. Hardy will also be in action. Kid Cash versus Dustin Rhodes will be a match. Raven versus Eric Watts. AMW versus Team Canada for the tag titles. Garza versus Hall will be a match at the beginning of the show, at least. We'll kind of make some changes to that one at the end. But Piper is going to be the guest ref in that match. That Ultimate X Division title match is going to be AJ Styles versus Petey versus either Daniels or Sabin. And then Monty Brown versus DDP and Nash will be in the triple threat to decide who faces Jarrett in the main event world title match, which will be the last match that they announce during this little segment. But we go to our opener, and it is with Eric Young versus James Storm. Before the match, the ref kind of throws out both teammates of each guy. So Rude gets sent to the back, as well as Harris gets sent to the back. Young charges to start the match, but misses. Storm kind of wrecks Young in and out of the ring to begin. Storm hits a pretty sweet twisting inverted neck breaker that I believe they called the Swinging Noose. Kind of a weird name, but... I think that's what they called that move. Storm then goes to recover, but D'Amore actually puts Young's foot on the rope. Storm then charges after D'Amore, but eventually gets hit with a baseball slide by Eric Young. Back in the ring, Young gets a few strikes in, but Storm eventually wins a strike exchange, and then he hits a move called the Eye of the Storm, and then he gets a two out of that. Storm then goes for a hurricane run off the top rope, but D'Amore actually grabs Young's tights, and Storm falls on his head. EY then goes for a tornado DDT, but that gets reversed and into a fireman's carry position. But D'Amore gets involved once again and kind of pushes Storm over into the ref. He comes in with the hockey stick, but actually ends up eating a last call super kick. But then Eric Young grabs the hockey stick and actually ultimately uses it on Storm and gets the win. Jake, what'd you think of this opener between Young and Storm?
Yeah, I thought this was pretty good. It kind of broke. Like, they didn't really get a whole lot of time to get much going on this one. I thought the Eye of the Storm was a pretty cool move, too. Tanae says that he did it. It was Whirly Bird style, as he calls it, which I believe is a technical term. But it was cool to see Scott D'Amore eat a super kick. It almost felt like it was going to be a squash for Storm, but then they pull the flag in and do all that stuff. So I went a star and a half on it. I thought it was an okay match.
Gotcha. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, all this match shows you is just how I think it was the way it was booked, just how EY's just not ready for this push at this stage of his career. You know, like, Storm had 90% of the match, and I'm not complaining about that, because I love James Storm, but you know, like Jake said, it was a squash up until those last 10 seconds basically. I went 2 stars on it. Like, the Eye of the Storm was great, the Swinging Noose was interesting, let's go with that. But I think it could have been a lot more competitive than it actually was.
Yeah, obviously, I think the Swinging Noose is a little more casually racist than TNA's willing to admit. I did say that. Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, I also ended up going 2 stars on it. Storm was pretty good in the match. It does show that Eric Young still has a lot of room to grow. But it helps, again, continue the build of this feud between these two teams. And It gives a little light to Eric Young that he hasn't really had by himself in the ring up to this point.
Yeah, I think Eric Young has it from the selling perspective at this point, because he oversells a little bit, but like I think he sells pretty well at the same time. But yeah, he hasn't really gotten the offensive part of the match yet, because I feel like Storm carried a lot of the match, and Eric wasn't too innovative when he was on top. So I think he's slowly getting it, but I think he definitely has it on the selling part of things. But I'd probably go 2 stars on it. I thought it was a pretty solid contest between two good guys. So, but after the match, we go to a package about the Cash and Dustin Rhodes rivalry, kind of the highlight of the backstage segment where they had, where Cash basically called Dusty fat and ugly, and then he said Dustin was kind of the same and pats him on the stomach. But this leads to our next match, which is Chris Candido once again, and he's taking on Dustin Rhodes. They lock up early to start the match with Rhodes kind of overpowering Candido. Candido eventually gets a quick knee to the gut and a punch on Rhodes before Irish whipping him, and then Dustin does his signature drop down punch that he usually does. They go to the outside where Candido does an eye poke, but then immediately gets hit with a backdrop. Candido then reverses an Irish whip, but misses a charge in the corner. And Dustin then hits a modified Shattered Dream where he kind of kicks him in the balls in the corner, and then follows it up with a bulldog, and that gets him the win. So kind of a squash, and kind of didn't really get to show off what Candido could do at this point in this one. But Lewis, what do you think of Candido versus Rhodes?
Yeah, this definitely shows the difference between Dustin Rhodes and AJ Styles. it definitely showed that Candido couldn't do as much in the ring in this match because it's with Dustin, and the finish was not great. Like you've already shown that Dustin has a finishing move, so why against a guy that it took the Styles Clash to beat last week do you do this to beat him this match? It wasn't great. I only gave it 1 star, and it's gonna take a lot to get Dustin to have a good match in TNA, and it's not this kind of stuff.
Yeah, as I say, I don't think he's in very good shape at this point in his career, so it's gonna take a lot for him to kind of get back into shape and look good in the ring on top of that. So Ben, what do you think of this Candido Rhodes match?
I mean, that's why he's wearing that lovely TNA t-shirt, so he can, you know, show off that svelte figure.
That's why I wore the jumpsuit.
I think Jake said it in the last episode, you know, what was it? The Dustin Rhodes is great value himself. So, yeah, he is now, I am now officially christening him the quite proficient Dustin Rhodes. He's not quite the natural, but he's quite proficient at the wrestling. There was only one other note I made in this match. It was nothing to do with the match. It was Mike Tenay yet again trying to make Saturday Night Replay sound like the greatest thing ever. Like, you know, yes, you can be stoned and pissed at home, but you can still watch TNA, damn it. Match didn't even last 2 minutes. I give it a gentleman's 1 star.
Gotcha. The natural, more like the fatural. Jake, what did you think?
Yeah, I would have saw also. It's just a squash, but even as a squash, it really doesn't accomplish what it should, because the point of it should be to make Dustin look good and to kind of get him over and establish him, but I don't think any of us left with any kind of feeling. If anything, I left, again, thinking of, like, of all the, you know, the kind of veteran guys they bring in that they kind of push, Candido should be at the top of the list, because he looks like he can go a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely didn't come out of this thinking Rhodes looked super impressive or anything like that. I definitely agree.
I'm more confused how you squash a guy that actually, like, took AJ Styles on a match. Like,
yeah. It kind of, like, makes AJ look like a punk at the same time. So, yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from on that one. Yeah, I definitely went the gentleman's one as well as the rest of y'all, because it was just a basic squash and nothing was horribly botched or anything like that. But after the match, we get another vignette for the new superstar, whoever he ends up being. But then we go straight into our next match, and it's Cassidy O'Reilly versus AJ Styles. They come out of the gates kind of hot. AJ hits a pretty brutal spinning wheel kick at one point, kind of really makes contact with his jaw, with the back of his boot. I thought that was a really brutal spot. AJ kind of wears him down with some big strikes before O'Reilly rolls to the outside, where he eventually kind of drags him into the guardrail and then slams him back first into the ring post. O'Reilly actually controls this match for a bit. And kind of works over AJ's back that he had rammed into the post previously. He eventually goes for a lion salt, but as Jake said, the success rate on that's not very good, and Styles gets his knee up. From there, AJ hits some big strikes and then eventually finishes him off with quite possibly the best inverted DDT we've seen yet. But Lewis, what do you think of this O'Reilly AJ Styles match?
This one was actually a lot better, and I was pleasantly surprised at it. There was a lot of good back and forth there. Again, this is a guy I know nothing about. I thought it was going to be another squash, but just like with Candido, they performed very well. That was one of the cleanest backflip springboard DDTs that AJ's hit, and it was so smooth in my mind. I ended up going 3.25 stars on this one, just because I thought this AJ match with a quote-unquote jobber was better than the average match.
I gotcha. Ben, what did you think?
I didn't go that high. I went 2.5, but this, like, just going back of what we said about the Rose match, this was the difference between a good squash and a bad squash, because, you know, AJ made Riley look really, really good here. And yeah, the springboard death drop was amazing, even by AJ standards.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the smoothest one, like Lewis said, that we've seen yet. But Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised too. I kind of just thought this was going to be nothing, but AJ kind of pulls it up. And Cassie O'Reilly, native of Monroe, Louisiana, by the way. So,
oh, wow. Yeah,
there you go. One spot, I don't know if you mentioned it too. He pulls out that, that's what I knew they were kind of going for a little bit more than a squash, when he pulls out that rocking horse kind of submission.
I forgot to mention that.
I was like, oh, shit, they're kind of going a little bit hard on this match. But yeah, like you guys have said, that the DDT was sick. Like, just it was so crisp when he flipped into it and just went straight. I thought, like, the amount of time it took from when he flips and sets it up to executes it was like nothing. It was awesome. So I went 2. Yeah, much better than what I was thinking. I thought it was going to just kind of be nothing.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was going to be a straight up squash, but I was pleasantly surprised. I'll kind of go with Ben. I think it was kind of a 2.5 kind of style match. Very, very good work by AJ. And I think Cassidy O'Reilly brought it pretty well, even though he had some pretty great value tights on. And it looked like he had, like, sewed together his tights and his little boot covers by himself. So sewing lessons with Cassidy O'Reilly is not a class that you should take at Universal Studios. So, after this match, we go to Raven in the backstage area, and he finds Watts eventually and nails him with a trash can and says he has something coming to him at the pay-per-view. But we'll see when that happens, what he means by that. We then get Ben's favorite segment that we haven't seen in quite a while now. We get 6 points of impact. He's with Nash, Diamond Dallas Page, and Monty Brown. Jeff Hammond starts this thing off with asking DDP what motivated him to come out of retirement. And if Hammond had listened to the previous week's promo by DDP, he would know the answer to this question already. But DDP says he wants the title, he wants the belt, and he wants to be remembered as one of the greats in the industry. Hammond then asks Monty about being called a double-A ball player, and DDP kind of snipes in and says, man, he's not even triple-A. And then Nash asks if he played catcher. And then Monty says yes, and that Nash is going to catch the pounce at the pay-per-view. Hammond then asks him how he feels about going against 2 former champs. He says it's all about competition here in TNA. Says he wants to be in the ring with the best, and he's going to take out the best and be the world champion at the end of the night. He then asks Nash what he thinks. What he thinks about facing these two guys. Nash says, as much as DDP's here for the tradition, he's here for the money. And then he tells Monty that he wants his wife's shirt back because Monty's wearing this absolutely absurd. I don't even know how to describe it. I'll try and let y'all, one of y'all guys describe it. But it's like this furry, sparkly, like it definitely looks like a woman's shirt for sure. But Jarrett then comes in from the background and kind of ruins the interview segment and kind of goes after Nash. And that's kind of where they leave this segment. Jake, what you think of this 6 points of impact?
Yeah, I enjoyed the return of 6 points of impact. It's been a little while since my favorite, Jeff Hammond asked DDP, because he says, he's like, what should I call you?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, you can call me a DDP. But I did think he was kind of awkward in this, Jeff Hammond. Like, he did an okay job, but it was a weird dynamic where, like, everybody's sitting in those chairs and he's, like, walking up to them and, like, touching on them like he's Maury Povich or something, like, on a talk show. Like, it was kind of weird. But the actual, I actually could get down with what they were doing, though. Like I said, I wish they had more of these type of segments than stupid Johnny Fairplay bullshit. A waste of time, you know, because it's actually they get some heat on the biggest thing that they have for the pay-per-view. And like, I love Monty. I think he was stood out again in this compared to everybody, even though I thought everybody kind of carried the weight pretty well in this. But I thought he looked like such a stud because he wears that absurd shirt, but then he looks like such a badass. Like, I liked him defending Jeff Hammond. Like, they're ragging on Jeff Hammond. He's like, it's okay, Jeff. Like, so I kind of like Monty. I like Monty, like, going full face there, like, defending Jeff Hammond. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. I like the heat. It let everybody show their personalities a little bit. It was a cool kind of unique way to build. Not unique, because I don't know if it's really unique, but it was just, it was cool to see them actually do something to build what they're doing instead of just telling us about these matches, like, have them actually build to it.
Yeah. I thought it was a strong segment for sure. Ben, what'd you think?
Monty, you are the fun. No, he can't do it, can he? Yeah. I also like when he asked DDP what to call him, and he says, yeah, I'll call you DDP because that sounds kind of classy. it's like what is classy to NASCAR people? as for the double A triple A thing, I'm guessing that's a baseball reference. If I knew or cared anything about baseball, I'd appreciate it a lot more.
Relegated leagues under Premier League.
Thank you. Yeah. I love the line about Monty's shirt. That was amazing, and it was quite a good brawl at the end as well. I kind of like how Nash sort of almost flicks a switch, and he goes from, like, being, you know, Mr. laid back casual guy, and then into, he just has to see Jarrett, and he just sort of snaps into, like, you know, into killer mode basically.
Yeah, he's like casually like, man, I just want the money, and then he goes after him at the end of the segment. So, Lewis, what'd you think of this?
So, I thought this had the potential to be, like, the first really good of these 6 points of impacts that they've had, having these three in the ring. Monty Brown being more serious and not, like, just imitating people and screaming pounce was, like, I thought that could be, like, a really, like, scary, hey, I'm actually trying to be serious now. I'm going to beat y'all's asses because I want that belt moment. But they didn't really play it out that way. It was a missed opportunity with Nash saying, like, I'm just here for the money. That should have, like, gone into the Jeff Jarrett pissing him off thing. And then, like, Nash grabbing the mic and being like, I was just here for the money. But now, Jarrett, I'm here to kick your ass or something like that to show that Nash actually has some personality and has some vested interest in wanting to win this match. So it had all the potential to be awesome, and it just didn't end up as good as it should have been.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty strong segment. It built to the triple threat pretty well, I think. It made Monty look like a goof in my mind, but I think... I think you know, they played with him about the AAA ball player and the shirt and all that. The shirt joke was really funny. But what were you gonna say, Ben?
I was gonna say that is the only time, by the way, where Lewis said it, that you're gonna hear the word 6 points of impact and really good in the same sentence.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Yeah, I mean, Hammond is a goon and a goof like he always is, but I think this was a perfectly cromulent segment, so I think it did its purpose pretty well. After this, though, we go to another final resolution ad, but then we go back to Dusty's office, where Trinity and Johnny Fairplay are once again looking for clues in Dusty's truck. Tracy, I think, finds it in some kind of like toolbox at some point, and it says something, but I didn't even write it down because I don't really give a shit about this storyline at all. I just wrote more pointless shit. This leads into our next match. It's Elix Skipper versus David Young. So we get two David Young appearances. How lucky are we? Young opens things up, kind of catching Primetime off of guard, and he almost actually gets a pin. He gets a two count. Skipper then takes over, getting the better of him on an arm lock exchange. Skipper then lays in some big kicks and forearms on Young. Skipper then eventually goes for a back elbow, but it gets dumped to the outside. Young then brings him back into the ring and actually hits a lion salt. So David Young can hit a lion salt, but Chris Jericho can't seem to ever hit it. But after that, he only gets two off of the lion salt. Primetime then reverses an Irish whip and reverses it into the play of the day, and he gets the win there. Jake, what'd you think of Skipper versus David Young?
I thought it was okay. I thought it accomplished its purpose of making Elix look pretty good. Which he did at one point. He was screaming, "You know what time it is?" Which I enjoyed. And he took a pretty sick bump out of the ring, which was good, because I think he kind of has that style where he's not going to come in and completely dominate somebody. He's going to sell a little bit because that's his strength. So I would have saw. I thought it did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what did you think?
Yeah, I went and started a quarter. Did what it needs to do. I'm finding it quite interesting the way they're marketing Skipper at the moment. Like, yes, he's appearing at Final Resolution, but you don't know who. It's just like you can say mystery opponent if you want. We don't mind, but it's just like they just seem to be like, I know Hardy got mentioned, didn't he? And it's like, we're not going to tell you who these guys are going to be facing, but you can see them on the pay per view. It's like, well, that's not going to make me watch.
Something tells me Skipper is going to be in a 6-man tag that ends up being very shitty.
Good.
I just have a somewhat inclination that that's probably what's going to happen. Lewis, what do you think of Skipper versus Young?
It had David Young in it. And back to the lion salt. I don't even know if we can fully call that, but he hit the lion salt. It was pretty bam bam Bigelow moonsaultish of him. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be interested in knowing who Elix Skipper's opponent was gonna be, but of the two from Triple X, I'm definitely more interested in Christopher Daniels' singles run than I am Skipper's. And that's just because I feel like Skipper's good in the ring, but he's good in, like, very specific high spot moments where you get those OMG moments. Actually having to carry a match, he's very clunky. He's very like Shelton Benjamin used to be, with, like, just messing up some simple stuff because he's just over-eager and not quite as steady as he needs to be to carry a full match outside of just hitting cool high spots.
Yeah, with Skipper, I think the talent's there, but I kind of agree with what Lewis just said. I think he tries to do too much with it. I think he's definitely talented, but
he's not a ring general. That's the thing.
Yeah,
he can't command a match.
Yeah, I feel like he plays well off of others, and David Young is not the guy to play off of very well. So, but yeah, I don't think he's at that point in his career, and I don't know that he ever necessarily gets there, just because I think he's one of those guys that has the talent somewhere deep down, but he can't ever seem to string it together unless he's matched up against somebody that can carry, you know, carry him and kind of help him out in those spots where he might usually lack. But I'd give it 1 star, just normal squash, and nothing was, you know, horribly terrible or anything like that, like I usually say. But after the match, we go to a Ultimate X turn or Final Resolution ad. So that's just yet another Final Resolution ad to add to the tally. We then get a Team Canada interview. Shane Douglas says Team Canada has all the gold, and plenty of people are gunning for them for all the titles. Johnny Devine then snipes in to start the promo and says, he kind of acts scared and says that all these slack jawed troglodytes are going to realize that Team Canada is the most dominant force in TNA. Rude then comes in and says, AMW's dream of being the 6-time tag team champs will become a nightmare. Petey then says he's happy about his match because it gives him another opportunity to prove that he is the best X Division champion of all time. Damore then says over the holidays that they spent a lot of time together and made 2 resolutions, and that's to continue their dominance, and number 2 was to make sure Americans realize that they are the inferior country to Canada. Lewis, what'd you think of this Team Canada interview? And I'm going to refer to all of you as slack-jawed troglodytes for the rest of this podcast.
Yeah, that was definitely the highlight of it. That was a really good one. And yeah, I mean, I like seeing the belts on Team Canada, both the X Division belt and the tag team belts. I think they were definitely the most dominant faction. Really the only real faction right now, because a lot of the other ones have kind of broken down. I guess you could count 3LK as one, but they're definitely the most dominant force in TNA at the moment. And I was complaining earlier about AJ not getting a lot of backstage interviews and stuff like that. I like that Team Canada continues to get them because I think they deserve it. They're running the show.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what did you think?
Yeah, good little promo, and like you say, kudos for bringing the word troglodyte into popular parlance. That was rather lovely, and also I appreciated the Boxing Day reference, which I know you boys won't get, but you know, Boxing Day is a rather lovely day after Christmas as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I do get the reference, but we just don't celebrate.
That was like 2.5 weeks ago. Like, so why are we talking about it on the 14th of January? I've got no idea.
Yeah, that one's a little questionable. But Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with everybody. They're a pretty good group for a promo. They kind of remind me of like a pack of like hyenas or something. It's kind of like their energy. Like they'll just kind of jump in and like say some crazy stuff, like the hyenas on Lion King. That's what I would. Team Canada, hyenas. There you go.
Bret Hart would not appreciate you calling his fellow Canadians hyenas. Yeah. I get where you're coming from, but yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid promo that kind of highlighted all of Team Canada and kind of put over that they're going to be a dominant force going into the next year and to the future. After this, we go into our main event for the night, and it is going to be Christopher Daniels versus Chris Sabin, and the winner gets the last spot in the Ultimate X Division title match. We start the match with some quick lockups. They then trade headlocks and arm locks back and forth. Before we go to commercial, Sabin actually clotheslines Daniels to the outside and then hits a tope to the outside, and then we go to commercial. When we come back from commercial, Daniels kind of catches Sabin coming off a springboard and hits him with an STO. He then does a triangle choke using the middle rope, which I thought was a pretty innovative spot, but follows it with a neck breaker and a neck wrench, so he's really focusing on the neck. Daniels continues to focus on the neck when Sabin eventually reverses an Irish whip, but goes for a Hurricane Rana, which ultimately ends up being a Daniels power bomb. He reverses it into a power bomb. Daniels then continues to work on the neck and seems to pretty much cut off any time Sabin tries to make a comeback. This time he kind of cuts him off with a Death Valley driver. Daniels then continues to wear him down with strikes and a big suplex. They then go into a bit of a strike exchange, which Saban seems to win, but Daniels then eventually cuts him off once again, temporarily. He cuts his offense off temporarily until Saban hits a big enziguri to kind of swing things back in Saban's favor. He then gets up and hits two big clotheslines. He then hits a sit-out powerbomb, but that only gets two. Daniels then catches Saban coming off the ropes with a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, followed by another brutal leg sweep move. He goes for the best moonsault ever, but misses, and even though he misses, he actually lands on his feet. Saban then gets a boot up in the corner and then hits a pretty beautiful tornado DDT. That only gets two as well. Saban then goes for the cradle shock, but Daniels reverses it and goes for the last rites, kind of crossroads move that he does. But that also gets reversed. Daniels then goes for the angel's wings, but that actually gets reversed as well into kind of a cradle pin. And that is where Saban gets the win. He actually gets kind of a sneak roll up on him. I kind of thought both of their shoulders were down, so I don't know if it was kind of a botch or what happened, but I think somebody mentioned it in the chat. I think it was Ben, so I'll let him kind of elaborate on it. But, yeah, it was kind of a weird ending, but Saban actually ends up getting the win, so he's in the Ultimate X match in the pay-per-view. We then get some last-second hype for the pay-per-view, kind of going through all the matches. And then we get a late-breaking news informing that Garza is out of the pay-per-view and that Hardy will be taking his place facing Scott Hall. Garza actually got deported from the country for, I think he got caught with steroids or something like that. So Garza actually never shows back up in TNA. So Garza has made his last appearance with us, which is kind of sad because he was kind of catching fire. But Jake, what did you think of this match, this main event?
Yeah, real good match. I thought it. They kind of broke it into, I guess, like portions or segments pretty well. Like the first part, they start with the strikes, and then they kind of close it out with Saban hitting that dive kind of in the opening part. And they kind of go into Daniels focusing on the neck, and I thought he looked really good, really aggressive. Like we said, we weren't really sure if he was going to be kind of more heel or face, and I think he came definitely against Saban, who was like pure babyface. I think he kind of went more heel, which I thought was a smart move. And Saban's a really good face kind of selling through all this. My favorite part of this whole match is the final stretch that they go into after the enziguri. Like, I thought they really heated up really well and kind of went into a really hot sequence in the closing. I actually thought the finish looked pretty good because I think it was just the way they shot it. But I want to say Saban's shoulders were kind of on top of Daniels. And that's kind of why. So I didn't think it was botched. I think he actually had his shoulders up, but I could be wrong. It was weird because they're kind of close in there, so you can't really see everything. But and I guess against them is that maybe we're not giving them the benefit of the doubt sometimes because they have fucked up a lot of things like this before. So maybe we kind of expect them to screw it up. But yeah, really good match. I thought too, which I think is an issue on a lot of these impacts, is that a lot of the matches never seem like they have any kind of stakes to them. They just kind of feel like some guys out there having a match. I thought this one, they did a really good job of getting across the stakes of the match, that it was to see who's going to be in the Ultimate X. And I thought that was good too. So I went 3.25. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I definitely love that it had stakes on it. But Ben, I'll let you elaborate on your thoughts on the finish.
Yeah. I really love that. I think this might honestly be the best match we have seen so far on the Impact programs, not the counting the pay-per-views. I went 3.5. I went back and watched the finish again, and I think Jake's right. I think it's the camera angle that's botched, mm-hmm. rather than what the ref or the wrestlers did. It's just bad camera work, basically, that makes it look like both men's shoulders are down, and mm-hmm. you know. That was my issue there, but the match itself was superb. And like I said, when we talked on the Turning Point show, it's amazing what happens in the X Division, where you get the guys to slow down a bit and tell a story and give them the time, and they don't go out there doing all the flippy shit all the time. You know, you get really good matches like this. Just some of the counters and the wrestling holds, and like Jake says, it started off slow, and then they built to the crescendo at the end, which was really good. And I'm not gonna knock them down too much for the ending, but yeah, I went 3.5 for it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. I think the X Division needs some of these kind of more technical matches, to kind of pair with some of their more high flying affairs that they have throughout the years. But Lewis, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, an amazing match these two put on. What I was saying in the earlier shows needed to happen was a good main event that sent a crowd home happy. This was definitely that. The back and forth was amazing. The final sequence at the end with the leg locked roll up pin was amazing. I fully was going into this match trying to remember the actual pay per view match, and I was fully going into this expecting Christopher Daniels to win because I thought that's how it was being built. And when Chris Sabin won, I got a pleasant surprise shock out of it. Because I want Chris Sabin to do anything and everything he wants to do in TNA. I had a nice little, Chris Sabin won this match pop at the end. And I, as an audience member, went home happy, which is what a main event should do.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you give it star rating wise?
I'd go all the way up to 4 for this one. I thought it was that good of a match.
Yeah. Yeah, I got you. I think Ben's definitely right. I think this is definitely the best match we've seen on Impact so far. I'd probably go with Ben on 3.5. I thought it was great. Daniels and Sabin have a ton of chemistry. I think they put together a really strong match here. And like Lewis said, this is the first time in this string of episodes that we've watched that we kind of went home happy, quote unquote. So I'm glad that they actually finally put a good main event out there. And like Jake said, it's kind of nice to have a match that has some stakes, has something going on behind the match. It could be a great match, but the fact that it had a little bit on top of it made it a little bit better. Lewis, I'll stick with you. What'd you think of this third episode, and what would you score it out of 10?
I think the third episode was definitely better than the first two. I think this is a good final show before a pay-per-view, just because you get your set up with Nash actually fully going at Jarrett, and the actually having Nash, Monty, and DDP sit down and talk to each other before the match to kind of build some tension between them. And then having Sabin and Daniels have that terrific match to lead into the last person entered into the Ultimate X match. I thought it was a good show. It wasn't a great show. I think I'd end up going about 4.5 or 5 stars on it overall, but it definitely gets a boost because of that main event match.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you. Ben, what'd you think?
I went 5, and that was, down to that main event, which, like I say, is really, really good. If you, catch it on Impact Plus or on YouTube, wherever you can get it, as well as that, you had the two really good matches with Hardy and with Storm and Young and Riley Styles, and six, even 6 points of Impact was okay. I'll go to okay.
I was just say good match and Hardy aren't words that should be put together in a sentence on this podcast.
I corrected myself very quickly.
Jake, what'd you think?
I forgot to mention too, Hall versus Hardy. Ugh, not looking forward to that shit show. But I enjoyed this pretty good, because I think when you have a 45-minute or whatever hour long show like this, if you could have a decent angle and a hot main event, and if there's anything pretty solid underneath, I think that's pretty good. So I actually went 6 out of 10 because I liked the main. I thought the 6 points was pretty good. I thought that AJ match was fun. I thought this was much, much better than the other ones that we saw.
Yeah, definitely. I would probably go 4.5 out of 10. I thought it was a pretty solid match. I still think it kind of lacked in some areas, but I think it definitely was the best episode we watched, and it was a great lead in to the pay per view. The final match was a great lead into the pay per view, kind of give us some stakes, and then we have all of our pay per view matches that we can look forward to now. But Jake, I'll stick with you. Who did you have as your MVP for this set of episodes?
Actually, with Daniels, I thought, because I thought he was good in the main event. I thought he's pretty good when he's on commentary, so good showing for him.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, who'd you have as MVP?
Yeah, I went Daniels as well.
Yeah, I got you. Lewis, did you go Daniels as well?
No, I actually went with AJ this time for like having those jobber matches and turning them into pretty decent outcomes.
I got you. I went with Daniels as well. I thought he really stood out in a couple of matches he had, and he was really good on commentary, like Jake said. So I definitely think he earned MVP on this one. Even though AJ is a good option or a good pick as well on that one, Lewis. But
yeah, I think it's funny. I never pick AJ for MVP, and this week I'm the only one to do it.
Yeah. I got you. LVP, Lewis, who'd you have?
David Young.
All right, Ben.
It feels like I'm repeating what everybody else is saying, but I'll go David Young as well.
I got you. Jake, who'd you have?
I'm actually going to go to the Naturals because I feel like David Young, they edge him because he's kind of just fodder anyway, like a jobber. Where I feel like they're featured so much. So, yeah.
But which Natural?
I'm going to go with both.
Uno or Dos?
Andy Stevens.
The dark-headed ones. Andy Douglas.
Dougie Stevens.
I kind of went with David Young as well. I just thought he looked bad and awful. I'd probably give a toss-up to Dustin Rhodes. I thought he looked pretty rough as well in his awful, awful leather and his terrible music. So
at least he won his matches, though.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So, yeah, I'll give it to David Young along with you fellas. Match of the night, Jake, what'd you go with?
Saban Daniels, easy.
Gotcha. Ben, you went with Saban Daniels as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Lewis, the same?
Yeah, easy choice.
Yeah, I definitely went with that as well. Definitely a strong way to end the last show. Moment of the night, I went with inverted DDT on O'Reilly. I thought that was the best one he's hit yet, so I thought that deserved a mention. Lewis, what'd you have as your moment of the night?
I went with the Saban roll-up win over Daniels to get him into the pay-per-view match.
Gotcha. Ben, what'd you have?
The botched moonsault from Cash in the random main event.
Oh, that could have been so much worse than it was.
Yeah, I was gonna say he definitely could have died. but Jake, what do you have as your moment of the night?
So I usually go something not in a match. So I actually went with the 6 points, the whole thing there. I thought that was a pretty good little angle.
Yeah, I gotcha. Jake, I'll stick with you. Who was in your express lane tonight?
Express lane. I think Daniels had a pretty good show. He's starting to establish himself as a singles wrestler. I'm trying to think because, I mean, you could always put AJ and, you know, those guys on, but I'm trying to think if anybody else really stood out. I mean, Saban's been pretty good lately, but he's usually pretty good. I think the main one would be Daniels. I thought he's done pretty well at kind of getting himself as a singles wrestler, getting over.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, who would be in your express lane tonight?
Daniels, definitely. Saban, I thought, had a really good night as well. And I'm going to put Nash in there as well. Like I say, I really like the laid-back psycho killer thing going on. He's got going on.
Yeah, I got you. Lewis, who'd you have in your express lane?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go with Nash because, like, it's not just the I'm here for the paycheck. It's not just standing in the background and, like, laughing at the camera and telling, like, bad jokes with Hall. He's actually, like, getting in Jarrett's face, like, trying to punch him over security forces. It's Nash actually showing that he wants to be here instead of just the collective paycheck guy that we know he's there for that reason, but at least he's putting in some effort.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll put Nash in there as well. I'm gonna give Candido a shout out. I was about to say that too.
Yeah.
He looked good in his two matches, so I'll give him a little bit of a shout out. So I don't know if he'll hang around for a long time, but I guess not too long, but
you won't be hanging around the earth very much longer, unfortunately. Yeah,
that's true. Unfortunately, I kind of walked into that one. I'm sorry, Candido. I apologize. Exit lane, Jake, who'd you have in your exit lane?
Conan, as always. David Young can go. The Naturals can go. Jeff Hardy, for sure. I mean, he's been in a ghost since he showed up. Yeah, we can keep going, but...
just do the Sean Kidd thing and list about 15 people. The whole roster, basically. Ben, who'd you have in your exit lane?
The Hardy and Conan are permanently stuck in traffic. You've also got the Naturals there. I've got to mention the TNA production, because like I say, that last camera shot for that Daniel Sabin match in particular was horrible. And I'm going to mention it because he really fucking annoys me, and that's Shane Douglas.
Lewis, who do you have in your exit lane?
I have the DDP Raven Watt stuff. Just all three of them.
Yeah, I gotcha. I'll put Hardy in the exit lane tonight because he was pretty bad in his match. And I'll also put Dustin Rhodes' outfit and music and Dustin Rhodes as well. So all three make it in there. But Lewis, what was your great value award for tonight?
I have the Dusty's Truck promos with Trinity Tracy and Johnny Fairplay as the great value opening to a softcore.
Oh, good God. Johnny Fairplay. That's disturbing.
There's an image for the night, guys.
Oh, man, that's bad.
He definitely gets kicked out of the truck bed, and they're like, just get out of here. And it's just the.
Yeah, they get tired of his ass, and they're like, they just end up fucking each other. So. Ben, who'd you have in your ex? Or who did you have in great value? Sorry.
So I'm gonna steal the one from last week. Dustin is great value, quite proficient, Dustin Rhodes, and also I'm gonna have to go with Shane Douglas and JB, who are basically great value Taz and Michael Cole from 2002-2005.
They call him quite proficient. Quite proficient. There you go.
Yeah,
naturally. Oh man, that's awesome. Jake, Jeff.
I'm gonna go with Dustin Rhodes' leather great value Terry Funk poncho thing.
Dusty fired Terry Funk, but he stole his poncho.
Give me that poncho, baby.
I'm gonna give this to my boy.
Needs it. Yeah, my boy.
He needs to cover up his gut, you know.
We just gotta turn to leather. We need leather.
That's too much leather, son. You need to go get an outfit change. I was inspired by Ben on this one, and I'm gonna go with Shane Douglas's great value Doc Hendricks. So I think definitely a good pickup on that one, because he kind of overacts and goes a bit into too much on his segments. But yeah, I definitely go with that one. But that'll close our show for tonight. I'll go around for plugs now. Jake, what you got to plug tonight?
As always, Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast over on North South Feed. We should be pretty soon have a new episode of PTB NXT on a Takeover Fatal 4-Way.
I got you. Has that made it on the network yet? Peacock.
Not in the United States, but we're slowly getting there. But there are other methods of watching, but it should be soon. They're up to 2016 on NXT, so
Ben, what you got to plug?
Now everybody's back from Tampa. We're getting back into the swing of thing of podcasting. So there's a new episode of the Special Relations out there, which is quite sort of angry, and it's not about wrestling. So if you're really not interested in football or soccer, however you want to phrase it, don't listen to the first hour. And then we are back with a new episode of Chicken Salad, where we are going to be talking about Backlash 2005.
Yeah, I was just, that one will be a fun one to do. I think we're recording that tomorrow, so
I've got some things to say to Mr. Kidd, because he's some of his reactions and ratings already have wound me up.
Yeah, we already have the Lenny Lane Ward locked up before we even. Lewis, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Lewis Maynard or Instagram at Lewis_Maynard.
I gotcha. We still need to get Lewis on. You heard about Pluto. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Until it happens.
Yo!
But pretty much the only thing I've recorded in the last few weeks, other than this pod, is from Square Circle to Silver Screen. We just recorded the episode the other day. We did Stuber featuring Dave Bautista and Kamel Nanjiani. That was a fantastic podcast to do with Roger and I can't wait for everybody to hear it. I believe it comes out tomorrow, as of recording, obviously. But yeah, very solid episode, and I'm looking forward to everybody hearing that one. But as always, I want to thank all of you guys for being on the podcast with me, and thank all the fans for listening to us every time we come out. And we will see you next time. Hail Sanders!